Hey everyone, Norm here, and hope you're all having a great Thanksgiving holiday if you're celebrating that in the United States. We are actually out of office this week. Everyone is traveling, even though we have so much we want to talk about. Yes, we have lots of thoughts on Half-Life Alyx, and we have lots of thoughts on Tesla's Cybertruck announcement, but you have to wait till next week to get those. So for this Thanksgiving episode, we're going to have a little bit of a blast from the past. Please enjoy this vintage episode of This Is Only a Test.
Okay, let's start the show.
It's July 17th, 2014. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. I have Loctite.
You know what's so funny? I was watching your video and I was thinking, oh, if I was only there, I'd keep that in my car.
I have Loctite and Snips. Well, Loctite and Snips.
And we bought them after finishing the printer bot.
Norman, spoiler, Chan, how are you doing?
Doing all right. We bought Loctite.
Yeah, we have Loctite. Jeremy Williams is here.
Hola.
We shoot all of those at one time for the most part.
For each build. They're done basically in one gang shoot.
I think we did the final day, tomorrow's episode of the printer bot on a second day, but I can't remember. So I did actually forget Loctite. I forgot Loctite twice, not five times, is all I'm saying. How's everybody doing today?
Busy.
Yeah, busy. This is the Thursday before Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
We are shooting.
Wow. Okay. See, when you said that, I had to think, is it actually Thursday before Comic-Con? Because for this past week, as we've been shooting video, it's video for the future.
It's the month of builds. It is the month of 1,000 builds. It's actually only 4 builds. We have so far done the printer bot. Have we announced?
We have not announced.
That happens tomorrow.
Yes. Let's not announce.
Keep that under our hat. We're building something else next week.
We're building 3 more things this month.
Yeah. Not all of them are for YouTube, but only the printer bot is for YouTube. The other 3 builds will be for Tested premium members only, and they are fabulous. We've already completed 2 of them, and the 3rd one will be completed when we return from Comic-Con. Our 4th one will be completed when we return from Comic-Con.
Have you posted the finish of the 3D printer yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Who knows how that's going to end up?
Such a cliffhanger ending.
I know. What happened at the end of today's episode? I don't even remember. We recorded that ages ago. Jeremy, you're not going to Comic-Con this year.
I'd love to.
Have you ever been?
No.
Oh,
I'd love to go.
It's a good event.
Yeah.
It's wholesome all America. Don't touch your face.
What?
While you're at Comic-Con.
Why?
At most conventions, don't touch your face.
For sickness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
That's how you avoid. Julianne Moore taught me that. Contagion.
Yeah. No, I'd love to go, but
it's a busy month for you.
There's only so many hours in the year I can actually ask for off from the family.
Yeah.
And I just choose not to ask for Comic-Con off.
I can see that. PAX is one, but PAX is a family event. We bring the whole
family.
That's
why John Hodgman doesn't go to Comic-Con.
Really?
Because his TV schedule and his like book writing schedule. Summer is his family time.
Yeah.
Well, he does a book touring and all sorts of stuff and comic. He does stand up shows too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Or like talks, I guess, is what his format is. But anyway,
all those celebrities they get dressed up when they go incognito.
Kevin Smith invented that, you know.
No, is it true?
Really? What do you dress up as? A hockey player?
He has a fat stormtrooper costume.
That's funny.
So if you ever see a fat stormtrooper, could be Kevin Smith.
I like it.
He loves Comic-Con.
What's today's date?
Today is July 17th, 2014. Wow. Welcome to This Is Only a Test.
All right,
It's episode 265.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
I don't even know where to start today. We got news. Microsoft has a enormous number of layoffs, mostly of Nokia folks. They're laying off 18,000 people total over the next 6 months.
Start with the downer news.
I'm sorry. It's uphill from here. 12,500 of those are Nokia folks. They're going to kill Nokia's feature phones that are mostly sold in the third world or developing countries, in favor of cheap Windows phones. And it seems like a big bummer. Seems like bad news. It seems like that Nokia acquisition maybe not so awesome for most people involved. That's all I got on the Microsoft thing.
So last week, I think we briefly talked about Satya Nadella's big company memo, and I can see, I can hear Jeremy's brain tuning off as Microsoft news.
Did you mobile
and cloud first?
Mobile and cloud first was the instead of devices and services, they are a productivity and platforms company that will create products for mobile and cloud, a mobile and cloud first world. In a 3,000 word memo, which got a lot of press and a lot of positive, like this is bold, but immediately after that, it was a, the pundits came out and said, this is to mask the impending, to cushion the blow for the impending restructuring, and look, create the context to drive the story behind that. I mean, anytime
a big CEO,
memo comes, it is a heavily edited press piece. And today the restructuring was announced. It is, like you said, of the 18,000 people being laid off over the next 6 months, 12,000 of the 500 of those are Nokia employees, including manufacturing employees.
And with that will be a lot of like people who are retiring and they just won't refill those positions, or people who leave the company won't be refilled, stuff like that.
Talking about like, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 Microsoft core employees, which they've done big layoffs like that before.
Not this big.
They're not 18,000, but they've done several 5,000.
This is a significant percentage of their workforce. It's like 18% of their workforce or something.
Microsoft wide.
15% of the total workforce of the company. Wow. 127,000 employees, which is a lot more than Google and other companies. Edbot had a good post this week about Satya Nadella's letter last week, where he kind of decoded it. And basically, he said the thing he said is, look, if you it was written for people who work at Microsoft and written in a very Microsoft way. But if you read this, they mentioned he counted things like how many times Windows was mentioned versus how many times Office was mentioned. Even though those two products are roughly equivalent in terms of revenue generated, Office was mentioned twice. Windows was mentioned 13 times. Said that engineering structure has to change. The whole organization is going to be flatter now, which they again hit today when they announced the layoffs.
Flatter is good. Fewer middle managers.
I think the overall takeaway I had from that Satya Nadella letter after reading the whole 4,000 words is that, like that old XKCD joke about all the Microsoft's corporate structure being each division holding a gun to every other division. I think that this is a response to that perception, whether it's earned or not. In that, like, it's ridiculous that Microsoft has touch initiatives on the hardware side and Office still doesn't really support touch. It's ridiculous that their Xbox, I don't know how to make a video that's like, they have a set-top box and have had one for 10 years now. Why can't I play video from my laptop or my desktop Windows machine onto that Xbox without any kind
of... That's what that glass thing was supposed to do.
There is so much stuff that is a feature that's been promised for a decade now. And Apple was like, look, this is easy. You just hit the little thing. And then Google's like, yeah, it's even easier. You just hit the little thing. Here's a $35 stick. And Microsoft's like, we're going to roll out a feature update for the $500 brand new console. It's not going to come to the old ones, though. Sorry, guys. And I know it's been there. It just doesn't work. So anyway, that kind of stuff.
I'm glad they're not moving away from the hardware. They are refocusing. He was never, Satya Nadella was never a big proponent of the Nokia acquisition. Elop, obviously, as CEO of Nokia, wanted it. And Ballmer wanted it. But when he was interviewed at the Recode conference, he's declined to answer very specifically about the Nokia acquisition, whether he was for it or against it, which tells everyone that he was not for it. So they did announce that, you know, the Nokia phones will still be made, you know, and they won't be running Android, they will be running Windows Phone. It comes at a time when Windows hardware and some of the mobile products are finally kind of hitting their stride. Windows Phone 8, people like it a lot.
People like Windows Phone 7 too, dude.
They like Windows Phone 8 a lot more. And having used it...
You used it?
Yes. I know someone who has one.
Okay. And that's not the same as carrying it, though.
We only have so much money.
That's true.
And their hardware, like what I'm using right now, it's the best Surface. And this is,
again,
a really good product.
Hold on. Okay, everybody, I'm playing devil's advocate here. the best Surface is not something I would put on the box.
This is one of the
first one was
this
bad.
Is the best Windows laptop I've used ever.
Better than the Yoga.
Better than
the old ThinkPads.
Yes. Yep. The best.
Even with the keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Windows.
I'm going to take your MacBook. I'm going to lock it up for you.
I didn't say it's the best laptop I've used. Windows laptop I've ever used.
Is the trackpad usable?
Trackpad's still not usable.
That is not a good...
But, you know, touchscreen.
I don't...
Touchscreen.
I can move my thumb while my fingers are still on the keys.
Pen. Touchscreen.
I could use my tongue on the touchscreen, I guess, without taking my hands off the keyboard, but I can't use the touchscreen.
Outweigh the cons so much.
Okay, when you're done with that, I'm going to take it for a couple weeks. I want to see. I want to live that life.
Okay.
The top heavy nature of the thing makes me super skeptical in general. But the new kickstand, like in touch mode, it's really nice.
Regardless, the point is that they're making some great hardware, and they're like, you know, like you said, like Jeremy pointed out, the mobile and touch and first products, and cloud first products, they are actually standing by that with the Office for Mobile. On iOS first, and hopefully that will be a trend that continues.
Well, I mean, he actually said that in the letter. They said, like, it seems really clear that they have to build stuff for other people's other companies' ecosystems, because people aren't in Microsoft ecosystems, and they need the people that are in Google and Apple and other ecosystems to use Microsoft products. So there you go.
We shouldn't read into this story that there's any less emphasis on a phone OS from Microsoft.
No, I think that we would go the other way, because they're actually killing feature phones, and they're killing the Nokia Android phone for the developing nations. So that to me says Windows Phone. If anything, I think that means that they're going to push Windows Phone in the developing nations as an inexpensive competitor to Android and iOS. So, and I mean, they have, if you wanted to grow market really quickly, you would sell a smartphone at feature phone prices in Africa and Asia. And then you have, you know, you can instantly get global market share for app developers, and it won't be the sexy high margin hardware, but Microsoft kind of doesn't care at this point. They just need people using that thing. So, Microsoft also announced that Xbox One sales more than doubled post-Kinectomy. Compared to May, they don't have real numbers yet. NPD is not out.
You mean since they dropped the Kinect?
Since they dropped the Kinect. So since it went from $499 with the Kinect to $399 without, it's doubled.
That's
doubled month over month, which is good. That means either people were waiting or people want to play Titanfall. I don't think any games came out to speak of. So maybe Wolfenstein, I don't know, but that's a thing. So I think that's all the Microsoft news. It's always sad to see people get laid off, and that is a lot of people. U.S. copyright news office ruled with Aero. So we talked about Aero a few weeks ago.
Aero.
A few weeks ago. It's still a dumb name. But they said when they lost the Supreme Court ruling that said they were essentially rebroadcasting TV over the internet, they said, hey, we're going to apply to be a cable provider under the terms of like Section 111 or whatever of the copyright legislation. And the copyright office said, nope, you're not a cable provider as we are defined typically. So that avenue is closed, and there's probably going to be lawsuits around that, if I had to guess. What that means is you are not going to be able to subscribe to Aereo, and they won't get the statutorily defined rates to rebroadcast over the air networks that the FCC allows. So the question is then, is that a bad thing or is that a good thing, or does it matter? Do we need like aggregators for over the top cable type distribution over the internet?
It's a legal argument. I don't understand the legalities of it, but it seemed like a totally legit business to me.
Here's $5 for DVR.
If I set up an antenna and I hooked it up to a slipstream or something and sent it to my phone, it would be totally legal. I could do that. So why can't I just pay a company to do exactly the same thing, even though they're doing it in mass?
If you were to sell that stream?
You can't sell the stream.
But it's mine. Every person gets their own antenna.
So they're selling. That's what the courts. I mean,
that's what the courts are for, right?
Exactly.
They are bypassing what the original FCC set up, because that didn't anticipate this type of technology.
So the larger question is, in a world where you can get, where you theoretically in the future will be able to buy cable channels a la carte over the internet. Mm-hmm. So, for example, instead of getting HBO Go as part of your Comcast subscription, you just pay $10 a month to HBO and get HBO Go for that. But you don't have Comcast.
Yeah, bring it on.
Do you need an Aereo like aggregator of channels to simplify that thing? To simplify that, so would you pay a company for ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and the Weather Channel $8 a month, or would you rather just give NBC $5 a month and ABC $5 a month and CBS $5 a month and Fox $5 a month?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like the convenience of, hey, here's all the over-the-air stuff for $10. That seems pretty easy.
Yeah. And over-the-air stuff goes away eventually anyway. This is short-term.
I don't think the over-the-air stuff goes away.
You think
away.
So? It just got
it's
real
fewer
good.
Fewer.
Like when it went all digital a few years ago, it's amazing.
I use over the air in my bedroom.
There's a lot of infrastructure on that.
And most of the channel, I mean, I get the K-pop channel.
That's pretty good.
No, I get all the channels, but the quality of the channel wise, I get the arts channel.
Do you have an antenna?
I have an antenna.
You have the wire cutter one?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yes.
Any antenna works great.
The wire cutter one is especially good.
You don't get NBC though, I bet, though. Right?
I get NBC.
Oh, you get NBC?
Oh, yeah. ABC actually, surprisingly, is the one that is the worst. Huh. To answer your question, why is it illegal in terms of interpretation? It's because whether companies can get jurisdiction over bandwidth over the air, whether that is location based. So whether Time Warner owns the spectrum for over the air in a certain area.
No, that's not the case. It's that the networks own the spectrum. The networks lease the spectrum from the FCC.
And whether that can be regionally.
That's a legal argument.
Yes. Hmm.
I don't understand.
Well, they're
saying that in order for it's illegal for someone in San Francisco to get spectrum for someone to resell over the air basically from New York to someone in San Francisco.
If there's a radius, there's a radius from the antenna, and if you don't live within that radius, mm-hmm. that's their jurisdiction.
That's the jurisdiction.
And so if you somehow found a way to receive those channels. So what if I live
within
that jurisdiction?
But Aero was saying, that's not what the FCC said. The FCC said this was Aero rebroadcasting, which is again over the internet. Like that was the complaint, not, I'm going to go find the actual article. It was a CNBC report that got
the fact that
the letter.
They're just turning over the air into digital signals is what's making, is the illegal part.
Yeah, in view of the Copyright Office, internet retransmissions of broadcast television fall outside the scope of the Section 111 license. That's the one that says here the compulsory statutory rates for licensing over the air content. The FCC has that because the U.S. government owns the radio waves.
So it's not even it's not a geographical thing. It's the format, the literal format of over the air versus.
It's that they're saying transmitting it over the internet rather than over a private network is not in the scope of Section 111. I bet this goes to court and I bet this gets changed. Or they push legislation through. They never get legislation through because the broadcast networks won't allow it.
All right.
Anyway, we'll see. It's,
I still think that over time, the Aereo type service is less valuable.
I mean, that's the thing is if you can buy access to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox and the channels that are in there for a reasonable price, I don't care if somebody bundles it up for me. I'd rather not have the bundle unless you the thing that this breaks is the idea of an over the top TV provider. Right. So if you want to launch a Comcast competitor, the way to do it isn't to roll out your own cable network in your region. The way to do it is to set up, collect all the TV the traditional way with satellite dishes and stuff like that. And, you know, fast fiber lines and then broadcast it out using servers across the internet and use the existing infrastructure rather than rebuilding your own infrastructure. Cause that's a losing game. But I think that what this could end up being is that will be against the law because they won't get statutory Comcast and you know, because the problem is the networks and the cable companies are all the same company at this point. So they won't get the Jeremy, I think you're asleep. I think we lost you.
I am asleep.
And I've gone cross-eyed. I think the cable company, I think this is puts it in a position where the cable companies and the networks will be able to quash the whole thing and make it not work, the over the top networks. Anyway, more to come, I'm sure. Speaking of Comcast, our friends Ryan Block and Veronica Belmont tried to cancel their Comcast account the other day.
I've heard about this.
Oh, you did?
So did everyone on
my
the internet.
My mom sent this to me.
That's wonderful.
Is that true?
Yes.
Ryan will be more known for this than anything else he's ever done.
Every time something happens and tech stuff makes the news, like when Gizmodo bought that stolen iPhone 4, mm-hmm. and Jason Chen
not the TV
was,
be guns.
No, not the TV. That didn't go widescreen enough. But when Jason Chen's house got raided and it was on the national news, mm-hmm. my mom called me. I was like, oh, yeah, Brian used to be my intern. His boss used to be my intern. That was the only time my mom's ever been impressed with my work, I think.
You play Nintendo, right?
I play Nintendo for a living. I was like, oh, yeah, they've been on the podcast. Oh, that's cool. What's a podcast? Anyway. So Veronica tried to call and cancel Comcast because they're moving. They just bought a house.
Veronica
mm-hmm. Belmont. She was on 3 weeks ago, I think. She wasn't getting anywhere. We have a fiber provider in San Francisco called Astound where you can get 100 megabit.
You're giving much more context than they get.
Good.
Right.
Yep. Context is good.
So you can get 100 megabit TV, fiber, phone, the whole thing, the triple play, I think is what Comcast calls it. And it's a compelling service, mainly because it's just not shitty Comcast. So when they moved, they set up this down. It's already wired in. They're turning off service at the old address.
Mm-hmm.
Veronica calls.
Okay.
Gets nowhere. Ryan picks up the phone, puts it on speakerphone, and records the call. The call... Have you listened to it?
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
So this is the tail on the call, the last 10 minutes of an 18-minute call.
Yeah. We hear, it picks up with, I would like to know why you're canceling service. And goes through this whole, it's almost Kafka-esque, the kind of voice trap in which the Comcast customer service retention person makes him go through
specialist.
And he basically, Ryan does a good job. He toes the party line. He's like, no, I don't,
I know you have to walk through your talkie sheet,
right?
Your flow chart.
And you need answers. I decline. And he was polite at first and then quickly transitioned to, nope, I'm not going to tell you why I'm canceling your service. I just want to turn it off. And they try to make him come to the store. They go through this whole thing. Everybody should listen to the call.
You're not going to play it? Any of it?
I can.
It's good.
Keep
audio.
Talking for a minute and I'll dig it up.
Yeah.
At one point, Ryan asks if this is a joke because right. it sounds like this might be a gag. Right. It's that bad.
And the upshot is at the very end, this person did promise to, and the person wouldn't even answer if he would or could. Because Ryan specifically asked many times,
yeah.
can you confirm whether you are the right person to cancel the service? And he just wouldn't say. And at the end, he finally gives in the caller or the
do you just play
specialist.
It?
Let's not play the whole thing.
It's super long. I would just play some of it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see what I can find.
And he won't even give him a confirmation number.
Next week, you're going to have 105 megabits per second for your internet. Astound will not give you that speed.
They give you 110 megabits.
We'd like to disconnect, please.
Okay, so why is it that you don't want the faster speed? Help me understand why you don't want faster internet.
You understand.
Help me understand why you can't just disconnect us.
Because my job is to have a conversation with you about...
Oh, no.
No.
Let's provide the commentary.
Finding out why it is that you're looking to cancel the service.
I don't understand.
Talk to me, you can definitely go into the Comcast store and disconnect your service there. Okay.
You're just asking for you to...
kill two birds with one stone. You got to return that cable car to the store anyway.
So at this point, let's pause right here. At this point, it becomes very, very clear that the person on the other end of the line, the retention specialist, would in fact love for Ryan to hang up.
The best case for him is that he gets so pissed off he doesn't cancel.
Because would love for Ryan to hang up, and if Ryan is determined, Veronica are determined to cancel their service, to go into the store and do it.
Because then it's on somebody else's hands.
Yeah. Because for his job, he cannot hang up. If he hangs up, that is a failure on his part, and he gets docked for that.
Well, and if he hangs
up... And if Ryan cancels on his watch on that call,
also
he gets a failure, and he gets docked for
that. Well, and if he hangs up, Ryan can call his credit card company and say, these people are not... They're not letting me cancel the service. I'm disputing the charge. so he can't hang up on Ryan.
He, you know, his job won't let him to hang up. He will get in his policy, the job. Have you ever had someone call you from a you know, unsolicited call or a call center place?
Nope.
Hang up on you? No, it's they right. cannot. I don't think there is a hang up button.
But I've also never called to cancel something and gone through what Ryan.
Sure.
No, I sure. like the worst. The closest I had to this was canceling AOL because I went on a trip to Alaska and needed dial up that was cheap. So I just signed up for AOL because they had dial in numbers.
Yeah.
And it was like 10 minutes, but it was nothing like this. Yeah. And that was in the 90s when AOL was, you know, bad.
It clearly sounded like a matter of pride for the customer service.
Right? But it wasn't a pride. It was a matter of his job.
Maybe he had
his livelihood.
Record. Maybe he was known in the office.
This is what I think.
For having never let anybody go. He's always convinced them to stay.
I think they're trained to be, it takes a certain type of person to be able to do that on both their parts. This is a battle of willpower. But this guy had no idea
who he was dealing with, though. That's the thing.
Poor guy.
VP AOL.
and a person who's the number of fucks he gives is none.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Block is the vice president of product at AOL. And I love also the TechCrunch, who I think is owned by AOL.
Yes.
When they read the story, a tech blogger insulted by a convert. Yeah.
So I like Jeremy's idea. When I was listening to this, the picture I had in my head was of an SNL character at the call center who is the best customer retention service guy in the world.
And
right?
You know, that narrative,
he's like at the top of the leaderboard.
Yes.
And that narrative and that imagining that is funny.
I don't think anything about this is funny, imagining whatever he
has that pride or whatever, but it hides the fact that this is a real problem in that company culture and in customer support culture in general, because this person and by extension Comcast's entire
pardon, but if you can just
customer support
service,
line are salespeople. They're not there to provide customer support. They become salespeople, and that's how they get paid. And the Virgita story, where a Reddit commenter post who actually worked in one of these call centers, they verified it with his pay stubs that he actually worked at Comcast, laid out the reward structure for retaining customers. And it is about punishment. They have their full salary or bonus, whatever. And anytime, and they have the phone call has an ideal time limit. If it's above 660 seconds, then you get docked, and at the billing department, 350 seconds is the cap. And if your call lasts longer than that, then you haven't done your job. Not only has that person not done their job, if the customer calls back after they've been supported, everyone that customer has talked to in that chain gets docked.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What? Really?
Let the team down.
Wow. It's like viral sucking. So there's a corporate level at the corporate level. There is incentive to be an asshole to customers. That explains so much.
And Comcast, obviously they came out and had their generic apology and they say they reached out, but
they were embarrassed.
I would be too.
Nothing's going to change. I mean, bring light to this and it is great. And everyone, including Ryan and Ron, hopes that this person doesn't get fired because it's the corporate culture that's the problem. And
it is Kafka.
I don't think it is a pride thing. It is just the sad state of that corporate culture.
You might be right. I sense a matter of personal defeatism at the end. When he finally gave in and canceled the account, he was deflated.
My question:
not able to return a cable card by mail.
Then I will send someone like a TaskRabbit.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Oh,
have a wonderful day.
And just so I can confirm, you said that
no confirmation
your name
number.
Is.
You'll get in the New York City billing statement within 3 weeks.
Correct. Okay. Oh, cool. God. Thank you.
Okay. Right. You're very welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Oh my God.
He didn't sound very enthusiastic.
Hey, GT crew, John from Austin.
Oh, whoa! Oh, God!
Oh, you're playing. Balls,
oh, about SoundCloud, it just keeps playing.
Oh no! Close it. It sucks for Ryan.
Yeah,
but being aware of this company culture, if you're going to be a Comcast customer, if you can't deal,
a choice. If you want internet that's not 25 megabits in San Francisco, California, the tech capital of the United States, there's no fucking alternative.
Yeah.
You can get DSL for 26 megabits a second at $60 a month. I get Comcast 50 megabit Comcast is half that price.
And it's not unreliable, too. get cutoffs and downtime.
Oh, Comcast?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's super unreliable, yeah. But it's fast. It's like having a car that runs 28 days a month really well and super way faster than you need. But the one day you really need it, it just shits the bed.
So you should be a CSR rep for Comcast.
I should. Hey, guys, we got 110. I can get you 120. I can get you all. I can beat your Google Fiber.
So my question is, if I call Comcast now, today or this week and try to cancel, what's the best deal I can get?
I was listening to this, I was like, this is the time. This is the time to do it. Make the move.
I thought about that too.
Yeah. Can we should do that on the podcast.
So that's live. The other side of this.
Record it and get me a great deal on HBO and Showtime.
I'm not sure what the legality of him recording this is. I don't know what California's wiretapping laws are.
Because he didn't disclose that.
Well, they say disclose.
Comcast will disclose.
We may record this, but
Ryan didn't.
I assume he said, I may record this call for quality assurance purposes, but I can't imagine that guy would have pushed on if he had.
I would have also, tell them this call may be recorded for quality assurance purposes during the waiting on hold period.
Can I say, hey, Comcast, no. This call may be recorded for quality assurance purposes.
As long as you say it after Comcast says it, you assume they're recording already.
Once it becomes a PR problem for Comcast that this guy
well, they're not
pushed
so
hard,
Ryan.
Obviously
yeah.
Ryan's in the clear.
Yeah. I don't know. This is a complete...
I really want to get some good deals on my cable.
Yeah, I would like to pay half and get twice as much speed, reliability and all. Mm-hmm. There has been a service tag. So if you drive around, look at Comcast boxes, they hang these orange and red tags off of poles where there's a known problem that they need to come back and fix.
How do you know that?
Well, because there's one on the pole that my house is connected to. I moved into this house 8 years ago now, almost 7 years ago, 7 years ago. Still there. It's been there the entire time. Every time somebody comes out to fix my cable, they say, oh yeah, there's a service tag on your pole. Every time. Are you guys going to fix that? Somebody will get to it eventually, I'm sure. Fuck you guys.
Wow.
If Astound, Sonic, anybody that provides something that's better than DSL comes to my neighborhood, I cannot drop Comcast fast. This is my pledge to ISPs in the Bay Area. Bring me better internet. I will be a lifelong customer. I can't wait. I embrace you wholeheartedly.
Keep wishing.
Yeah, I know. Tesla Model 3.
Yeah, non-news. We already knew this. We just didn't.
Really?
Yeah, everybody knew that they were going to release a cheaper,
they hadn't announced
more
it.
Affordable. They still haven't announced it. All they announced was the name.
It's Model 3.
So all we know is here's Model 3.
Is it going to be like a Fiat size?
Well, no, they haven't said anything. Okay. It's a 7 name. So here was what was up in there. They did say they eventually wanted to make it affordable. What we didn't know was that the next model was going to be the $35,000 one.
Yeah, I think we did.
Hold on, so they're going to do that before the SUV?
No. SUV is the Model X.
So Model X, which is the Gull Falcon Wing doors,
awesome.
Coming out next year, has the exact same drivetrain, I guess you call it, as the Model S. It is the same bed. It's like
a heavier car?
It's like the Camry and the Toyota Sequoia were the exact same cars, except the Sequoia, I believe, was the bigger body. Or
really?
Avalanche or whatever. The one that was like not the Forerunner. So,
like the SUV, not the off-road vehicle.
The tall station wagon was the exact same drivetrain as the Camry.
I did not know that.
The Falcon Wing, the Model X, is the exact same car as the Model S, but less aerodynamic.
Yeah.
And heavier.
Yeah.
And so you're going to expect less
range
per charge. Things people should also, but the question, and you might be right, Jeremy, that they had said that 35,000 was their target for the next car. The question that was up in the air for us, at least, is that was Tesla going to, I know they wanted to get mainstream, but were they going to try to still be a premium car manufacturer?
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be a car manufacturer.
And I think making this formal announcement that Model 3 is going to be 35,000 says that they, like a Toyota slash Lexus, will have the from 35 all the
or
way. And 35
BMW.
Or like yeah. BMW.
Yeah.
BMW is more reasonable because their model, I guess their 3 Series.
Starts at about 30, series,
yeah,
35
is,
grand.
Yeah. It's going to be, you know, it's going to range from the mid 30s to 100,000.
I mean,
now the other thing to take in consideration is that when they announced Model S, all the press releases said 50,000
was their price. And this was after the tax credit, which was still valid at the time.
Yeah.
So when they say 35,000, what you're really going to...
It probably means after tax credit.
It means after tax credit. And also what it means is that if you're going to get want a car that you can actually drive reasonably, like not like the crappy
maybe
spec,
twice that much.
It will be like $50,000 or $60,000.
Well, but the interesting thing that's happened over the last 4 years in that price range, though, is the 75-mile range all electric cars. So the Leaf and the that Mercedes thing and the Fiat 500 and what's the other one? The little smart car, all of those cars range from, then they're very cheap compared to even like a traditional hybrid. So what that tells me is they're going after Priuses, not after the all electric 75 mile cars. Cause like a Fiat 500, is like 19 grand after rebates and all that stuff, after the tax credit and all that stuff, the electric version. The, if this is 35 starting, that to me says, hi Prius, we want to eat your lunch, which means that they have to have a real range on it. Because if they're gonna be in the same price range as a Prius and it's not a luxury car,
I don't know. There's a big difference between in range between a Prius.
No, I know.
And the entry level
and
Model
any electric car.
But okay, so here's the thing: Tesla has infrastructure that they're putting up. They're spacing the superchargers on the freeway. At let's say 180 mile gaps.
It might make sense for some people.
Yeah,
but not enough to market an entire car.
Yeah. They've only sold, I mean, and they've sold more Model S's than they anticipated. I think 23,000 last year.
Is that true? More than they anticipated?
Yeah, that's how they paid off that loan so quickly from the government.
A lot of that was pre-orders though, right?
They're building they're selling every car they build at that Fremont plant.
Yeah.
But compared to a manufacturer like Toyota, Toyota sold more cars in 1 month, in one model of one car in 1 month than all of Tesla.
But that's, I mean, it's a 4 or 5 year old company.
The other thing is that by 2015 or 16, whenever this Model 3 comes out, the marketplace can be more competitive.
There's more electric cars coming.
Way more electric cars coming.
They're even licensing their tech to other companies, right?
And so their competitive advantage is if they can build the infrastructure for the roads and make them Tesla exclusive. And you know what stuff's not going to work?
You mean superchargers.
The superchargers. And it's not going to be that battery swapping bullshit. The one where they drive the car over and do the swap.
It's 80% in 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's stuff you plug in next to an In-N-Out, and then you get the food, and then in 30 minutes you can drive.
And I will grant you, they are building those like crazy.
Yeah.
You can drive from here to North Carolina now on superchargers.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I know there's one, at least one in Alamance County, North Carolina.
Yeah, look at 40 and 80, and they're all... There's a corridor on both of those freeways. If not now, then by the end of this year.
Well, they're going to have to it's not going to be enough. They're going to double back and go back to every location they've put one or a system set up in and triple what they have there.
Well, put them closer fill in the gaps.
Because there will be lines for that, because right now it's free charging at those.
Only for Model S.
Yep.
But the free charging thing is that's just because the plug only works in Model S, right? They have their own standard.
Well, it also works in the Roadster, but I don't think the Roadster gets the free charging.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't think the Roadster has the range to get the free charging anyway.
No, really?
It's like 100 miles or something.
Well, this car isn't coming out for 3 years, the Model 3.
Yeah.
So it's a long wait. I guess their batteries are going to get more efficient.
Maybe.
I think they're counting on it.
Okay.
But I think that I did read that it was a little bit funny. They wanted to use... This was tweeted or quoted somehow from Elon Musk. They wanted to call it the Model E. Then they'd have the Model S, E, X. But apparently Ford said they wanted to use the Model E, so they had to change it to Roman numeral 3.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
S3X is leader.
What? Like backwards? Backwards
it's
3?
It's more elite.
3 is a backwards E, Jeremy.
Leader.
It's
more elite. I know,
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's the first time I've said elite in 5 years.
You need
something.
To apologize, Norm. I don't know.
I know someone who's that as their PIN number. That was sad.
SE. What?
Lead.
I'm going to just move on to the Jibo or Jibo. Jibo. Did you see this? This seems right up your alley, Jeremy.
Have you not pre-ordered this?
I saw it on your list of topics. I have no idea what this is.
Well, you want me to play the video?
You should play the video. Jeremy should load it up. I'm going to play the video for you, and I'm going to watch.
Let me play it here.
I'll be able to hear it from Will.
Okay, but we'll synchronize so I can Yeah, Will has this screen on his laptop.
This
where
is your
hold on, hold on, Will.
I just opened YouTube and it starts playing. I can't help this.
Hold on.
It's a family robot, Jeremy.
Okay, are you ready?
You have a family.
Are you ready?
3, 2, 1, click.
This is your house. This is your car. This is your toothbrush. These are your things. But these are the things that matter.
That's a picture of your family.
In between is this guy. Introducing Jeebo.
That's the robot.
World's first family robot. Say hi, Jeebo.
Hi, Jeebo.
Jeebo helps everyone out throughout their day. He's the world's best cameraman.
Eva.
By intelligently
exactly.
Yeah, that's what they're making. So
they're if you look around the Romo,
yeah,
there's a lot of the personality traits of the Romo.
How clever. I mean, the movement.
It's not a mobile robot. I mean, you can pick it up and carry it around,
yeah,
but it has two rotating axes at like a 30-degree angle and 90-degree
angle. It's the
angles
that gives it personality.
So it can tilt its head.
Yeah.
You think about this. This is actually... So the person who developed this, what's her name? She's at MIT Media Lab. An expert on social robotics.
Oh.
Left MIT Media Lab. She might still be there, but started this company and got a bunch of product people. It's on Indiegogo right now, $500. So I'm letting you know so you can maybe... It's shipping end of next year. But it's from her experience, you know, building social robotics. And these are like teddy bear robots and the seal robots and stuff
it's
like
Cynthia
that.
It's Cynthia Brezel.
Yes.
Brezel.
So the interactions that they learn and what people respond to led them to design that's more abstract, that's more digital screen.
Yeah.
And so they took influences from, you know,
Eva.
Like Eve, clearly. There's a white model and a black model. The black model looks way more menacing. The white is so pleasing.
It looks super friendly.
They took the movement from that.
Jeremy's going to order it right now.
You know
now.
That orange robot that spins around that it was in the Spoon music video?
Yeah, the Kibo or... You keep talking. I'll
I forget
about.
The name of it, but that one had the a very similar three-axis, two-motor angle.
Keep on,
which moved just like this Jeebo does. Maybe bounced around a little more.
It was bouncier. It danced.
But that type of motor movement, plus the Chumby people have done the same thing with the screen. We're using a digital screen and
not at all
the same stuff with the screen.
Kind of
facial animations, the sound effects.
You mean the Romo?
Not Chumby, the Romo.
Yeah.
The Romo people did very similar thing to what the Jeebo people are doing. And the Chumby people did the passive internet connected device thing.
So
this is all that just in one robot.
It's really, it's like in the way that we normally think of robots as things with arms and legs that walk around and do things around the house, this is more a stand for a voice interface to your to the internet for your house.
So
for example,
for one room.
Well, they're $500.
Maybe not the Smith household. Maybe you're gonna have four or five of them.
I only have three rooms, so that's, you know, I'll triple the value of my house.
Every room with a Nest Protect will have one of these underneath it.
It's portable, is the point. My hunch is that it's gonna have a battery, so you can just leave it unplugged from the wall and pick it up and carry it around.
No,
why not? Batteries are cheap. It's gonna be arm based, so it's not gonna use very much power. Why not?
It would be nice if it was portable.
There was a picture in the video of it, them with a picnic table with a bunch of kids at a birthday party. And they say, Jeebo, take a picture. And it takes a picture of the birthday party outside where I assume that you don't have power. That's the thing that this video is selling me.
I hope you don't need to tether it.
I think you pick it up and carry it around
and then plug
where
it in.
You need it.
Okay, as long as there isn't a proprietary power plug.
I think you plug it in at the end of the day.
No.
I think if you want it in the kitchen, you carry it in the kitchen, set it down, you use it for 2 hours and plug it back in when you're done.
See, all the pictures I've seen have it plugged in. It's a prototype.
This is a prototype.
Yes, sure.
It's huge. Why not chuck a battery in there?
Cost?
Yeah, okay. Here's the thing. Good microphones with voice cancellation, all that stuff. Two big cameras in the eyeballs so they can take pictures and track faces.
The face tracking and microphone is in the video, at least, is the magic thing. For example, if you do the video conferencing,
yeah,
it will turn to the person that's talking.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, it doesn't need the wide field of view.
So I had a 360-degree microphone, so it can tell where you are.
And it can spin 360.
Yeah.
So here's the other thing. Like, having a voice interface for Internet of Things. I apologize for saying that, but like I have all that the smart thing stuff with all the light controls and motion sensors and all that stuff in the house. If I could just tell Jibo to turn off the lights at the end of the day instead of opening the app, going to the right app, clicking on the right page in the app, clicking three switches to turn off the lights, mm-hmm. that would be really swell.
Yeah, but don't you want that on your phone?
I want it everywhere.
As a part of OK Google or something that's immediate.
Both. All of the above.
Yeah.
I would, but my kid doesn't have a phone. She's not going to have a phone for probably 5 years, maybe 10 if I have anything to do with it.
I'm with you, yeah.
And there needs to be a way for her to turn lights on and off too, right?
So
where's mom? Or call mom.
One of my fears call mom. Is that that the developer model is going to be their closed platform. So it's going to be their apps. They have to call them skills. But it's not like this is something that's going to work with, you know, the developer, for example, I'm going to use the Philips Hue.
Yes.
Develop an app for Jibo, a skill for Jibo that will tie into, you know.
There's an API for Hue, actually. So Jibo could develop an app for
Hue. Yeah. Third party. But this is something that I would want to be perfectly integrated with Google.
I think that the future, at some point in the future, in order for all of this Internet of Things crap to work right, we have to have either devices or services that connect all the different ecosystems to each other in a way that makes sense. For example, I have 10 different ways that people can send an instant message type message to me. I have SMS, I have Google Voice SMS, I have iMessage, I have AIM, I have 3 different Google Talk accounts, I have a couple other Jabber accounts. Why do I not have one service that I would be happy to pay that goes to all of those different things and then just gives me one set of notifications?
Including texting?
Yeah, why? So Trillion kind of, and those kinds of apps, and Adium and those kinds of apps kind of do that on the client side, but that's not actually what I want. I want a service that does that on the internet and then just gives me one thing to connect to.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we need for Internet of Things type stuff.
The Jibo spec page does say battery. It does say battery.
Oh, it does.
Yes. 6 pounds. So that's relatively perfect. Light. Not only is that screen a touchscreen, the LCD, which
you look at the
demo, it's a touchscreen. So you can tap it, poke its eyes, whatever. But the full body is touch.
So you can rub it?
So you can rub it or it'll know when you're picking it up.
Is it open?
Open source.
We don't know if it's just as an SDK with APIs, JavaScript APIs, access to Sensory plugins, and an Eclipse plugin.
ARM-based processor.
I think $500 is going to be a great price for this thing.
Are you guys getting one?
I pre-ordered one this morning.
Great. Excellent. That's all I wanted to hear.
I'm going
to
order one.
You're both getting one?
Maybe. I don't know.
Like you're seriously...
I want it now.
You've committed to
wanting
one for your house. Wow.
I want it right now.
Every room.
Jibo!
So do you remember...
Jibo, make me a sandwich! Jibo!
I know Arm!
Jibo!
Arm!
Jibo!
It really is designed like Eve.
Totally.
Eve?
And I'm sure someone will develop the app that will make
Who was in turn designed by Johnny Ive.
Oh, here we go. Where should you put Jibo? Does Jibo have wheels? No, the best place to place them is where most of your household activities happen, like in your kitchen or the family room. So I just need two.
So do you remember that kitchen tablet thing?
Yeah, the 3Com Audrey. I have one.
Yes, this is the Audrey come to the final iteration of the Audrey.
No, it's not. It's the beginning of the first real iteration
of the Audrey that people were actually going to care about.
So the Audrey, if people don't know, was a local hub for Palm Pilots. So you, your wife, your kids would all have Palm Pilots, and instead of syncing them to corporate email servers or Lotus Notes servers or something like people used then, I guess, or a Palm Pilot server that you had to run someplace in your business, you had this Audrey thing that was a small resistive touchscreen device that sat on your kitchen counter, and it would sync your palms to that so that everybody would share their calendars across the family. Needless to say, 3Com killed that before it even went to market. They sent out review samples, and that was it. I have one. I kept the review sample.
Jibo, you won't have Jibo for over a year.
I know. It's Q3 2015, and if they say Q3, it's probably going to be Q4.
It's a long time.
Next year. Next holiday.
Is the software open source? It's built on top of Linux, which is open source, but the Jibo subsystem will remain closed source and proprietary for the time being. This is an area that we will continue to look at and evaluate.
God, this is the perfect companion for Google now.
Oh my God. Jibo, order pizza.
So when
that's one of the demos. Order me dinner.
No. Nope.
Do you want Chinese food tonight? Yes. Oh,
I have a
your
special
lady friend
coming.
Sent you
now
a message.
Order me two.
Yes.
Food for two.
Make that food for two.
When it arrives out of the box, it will have the following functions: minder, messenger, photographer, storyteller, and companion.
That tells me nothing. It can tell stories to your kids.
We can tell you that.
Weren't there companions in AI?
Booyah. That's an accessory.
Tell Dildonics.
Where's your port?
Jibo,
I can't find your port.
Jibo,
make your port accessible.
Full body touch. Full body touch.
Jibo.
Show me your zones.
Jibo, I need to feel love.
This is the first step for her.
I almost didn't talk about this, but I'm glad we did.
If Google is, everyone in Google and Microsoft are both doing deep learning.
Deep learning.
This is the hardware end, the interface end to those deep learning machines.
Jibo!
Wow.
Jibo!
What do we think about the name?
I think it's great. I love saying it.
It's great.
Jibo. Jibo! It's really good. Why would you not like to say Jibo?
I just want to say Jeebus.
Well, that works too. Can you name your Jibo? Can I call my Jibo Chet if I want? That seems like a good name for a Jibo.
It does not come with a female option. Jibo is male. It says right here in the fact.
I have no issues with that whatsoever.
Wow.
What are you? Are you?
No, I think
it's all good. A robophobe?
No.
It looks like to write Jibo apps, you need to know basic web script or like JavaScript and stuff
What
type
of accessories can you
or
get?
Scratch?
Where's accessories? Over here.
The battery is an accessory.
Cosmetic items.
Fun cosmetic items.
Can you glue a mustache onto Jibo?
Fun prosthetic items.
Oh my God, I've never wanted anything more than Jibo. Jibo! Why 2015? Why?
I mean, it'll be all over CES next year.
And finally, are we done with Jibo? We feel like we've exhausted
I think you did it.
What would you use Jibo for, Jeremy? Would you let Jibo tell your kids stories? Does that make you uncomfortable?
Oh, yes. That does make me uncomfortable.
I like reading stories to my kids.
I like reading to my kids. But I could see Jibo being handy as a hands-free internet device in the kitchen, for making calls or checking messages.
Or, hey, Jibo!
Getting recipes.
I need a mac and cheese recipe.
Oh, this is the perfect, so in the video, they showed a kid, and you mentioned you'd be, both of you wouldn't let this raise your children.
probably.
But in the demo, they had the young girl have the Jibo tell her a story in the story mode, in a tent, much like you have a teddy bear, a Teddy Ruxpin or something.
Yeah.
And I assume that it can play video and narrate the story and interact and respond to touches. But with the cameras, the parents will be able to see from the Jibo's perspective what the kids are how the kids are interacting.
So you're saying it would be almost like I'm there reading the story to my kid.
Right, without actually having to read.
It's like the HAL 9000 vision.
Yeah. Yes.
This is for real? That's in the video?
That's in the video.
No, the HAL 9000, I'm saying that the spying thing could be a feature.
That's true.
I want.
So it's and they're maintaining eye contact with it at all times, and it's tracking them as they move.
Yeah.
If you mess up the Jibo, your kid could love Jibo more than they love you.
It's true. I mean, if Jibo actually stops reading when my 4-year-old daughter has a question about a dog that's in the story and can answer.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
What is a salamander, Jibo? And it could stop the story and tell her. Then she might love Jibo more than me because I get frustrated when I get those questions.
I'm looking forward to this question.
I told you a salamander.
Because when I'm reading, I'm performing.
Salamanders are any of the approximately 665 extant and all the extinct species of the amphibians within the order
Caudata. That's exactly the response.
The present day species are often grouped together under the term Eurodila. They are typically characterized by fuck off, Jibo. Do you perform when you read? I love performing.
It's the only way I can
do the voices.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I dig that stuff.
It's like C-3PO telling the story of the rebellion to the Ewoks.
So when they interrupt me with questions, I feel like they're not immersed in it. And
that means that's a failure on your part, not theirs.
I'm not willing to admit that.
No.
That is a fail on your part because you should be able to ad lib and anticipate when your daughter will have questions. So as you're reading, it was a bright sunny day and the salamander, which is like a newt.
One of the approximately 655 accidents in all the extinct species.
And into the flourish, into the delivery.
Yep.
And you can anticipate those questions.
Well, you'll be a fine dad, Norm.
It's always got to think about this.
In literature and legend, the salamander is associated with fire, being supposedly unharmed by the flames, while clothes made from its skin or wool were believed to be incombustible.
I could have said anything, and I said salamander.
Finally.
Oh, Microsoft to shutter Xbox Entertainment Studios.
Wait, what does that mean?
No way.
Oh, is that, does that mean, wait, does that mean the ET cartridge dig will never be shown?
Yeah, no original video programming.
That means that doc, oh, that's so sad.
That's so,
wow.
That's so funny.
Not really. I mean, except for the people who are now unemployed.
No, no, no. Just, I mean, that's just the ET video thing.
Yeah.
Is that that video would never be shown.
Wow. Yeah. 200 people work there.
The thing about the ET video that killed me is everybody's like, well, reportedly, these cartridges are buried in the dump. When it was in the newspaper in like 1981, when they actually buried the cartridges in the dump. Like, it wasn't like a urban legend. It was just a thing that happened.
The Halo series is expected to continue.
Oh, but they're not going to cut the ET thing. Oh, that's so sad.
Somebody will leak it on YouTube someday.
Or maybe somebody else will buy it.
Hey, did
Sony.
No, I guess this is old news, actually.
What is it? We like old news here.
It's totally unrelated. There was a movie that never actually got released from 1983 with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
Really?
Yeah. And it got leaked on the YouTube. And no one noticed it was on YouTube until Reddit found it a couple days ago.
How long was it on YouTube?
Almost 2 years. Or,
wow.
Yeah, or maybe 3 years. But only had like a few thousand views.
It's about hidden gems. The Atari thing, the Signal to Noise documentary, is still being produced.
Okay. Because
that's already been started.
Did we
not do any future ones?
Oh, there
did,
it is.
Did we talk about the time travel study?
No.
No. This is a real thing. So a few years ago, somebody, and I'm probably going to mess this up, so I apologize in advance because I'm doing it from memory. But a few years ago, somebody said, look, if there are time travelers, we would probably be able to find evidence of that by looking on the internet. Like, look and see if there's you know, some sort of evidence.
Oh, right.
That,
look at photographs of people, right?
I don't think it's that one.
Oh, okay.
It's let's see. What was this? What were the specifics? They were going to go look for things that you couldn't know from the future that showed up on the internet before they happened.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
Things like the 9/11 bombing, things written about the 9/11 bombing that were in Google before September 11th,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
That's not how time travel theoretically works, though.
It depends on which version of time travel you believe in.
I'm suspending my disbelief here, Norm. This is exciting.
So they did exhaustive research and then tried to publish the paper and got nowhere and published it on nobody would touch it because it seemed like the kind of thing that would get your journal laughed at. Ended up publishing and making it was an interesting art. It was an interesting paper because they actually found it. Like, how do you verify? I'm going to look it up and see what the title of the paper is.
Same kind of thing where it got finished and written but never released and then finally eventually leaked?
No, they published it.
They created a system of standards for testing a time traveler.
Yes, that's exactly
for deducing whether time travel had occurred.
I'll read the abstract. Time travel is the title of the paper is Searching the Internet for Evidence of Time Travelers. Time travel has captured the public imagination for much of the past century, but little has been done to actually search for time travelers. Here, three implementations of internet searches for time travelers are described, all seeking a prescient mention of information not previously available. The first search covered prescient content placed on the internet, highlighted by a comprehensive search for specific terms in tweets on Twitter. The second search examined prescient inquiries submitted to a search engine, highlighted by a comprehensive search for specific search term submitted to a popular.
It's just mirroring the idea of prescience and search.
Yes,
with existing search technology. I think there are two ways to apologetics this. One is that time travel only works. You can only travel as far back as when you create the time machine.
You mean the quantum leap theory?
So when you create the time machine, which is still in the future, that's the furthest. That's the first time we'll get time travelers. That's sent back there.
It's like the Douglas Adams. This is kind of the Douglas Adams view of time travel.
And two is that, you know, technology is sufficiently advanced, is we'll just be able to mask any of that.
Mm. They have not disproved time travel, but they did not find any evidence of time travelers. So there you go. Good to know.
Okay.
It's not the same thing with aliens.
So there's the chance.
You can't prove a negative.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You can't prove that there aren't aliens. Right.
If anybody wants to watch that movie, it's called Nothing Lasts Forever.
Okay.
And
still on YouTube?
Everybody found it. Like Rolling Stones covered it after Reddit published it.
Reddit is where everything starts.
Yeah.
Well, actually, 4chan is where everything starts, and then it goes to Reddit and something awful, and the big message, NeoGAF, the big message points to the internet.
4chan.
Then from there, it filters down to, you know, your Boing Boings and your other websites.
And your mom.
Yeah, and then eventually, 3 years later, my mom learns what a Rickroll is during the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Yeah. Amazon's testing what I'm going to reductively call Netflix for books, where you pay a flat fee every month and get access to a massive library of titles. From the information that people have been able to scrape off of Amazon, it seems like about 638,000 titles are in the trial of the 2.7 million or whatever books that are available for Kindle. So, would you guys pay for a book service? Do you read enough to spend $10 a month on books?
Oh, heavens no. I do audiobooks almost exclusively.
I would do audiobook subscription service.
Can't you?
No. Audible doesn't offer one.
Audible offers a monthly thing where you get one credit a month or something?
One or two. Yeah. Okay. That's it. And that's a horrible thing because they let you accrue them for 6 months and then they cap it, but they keep charging you. So I have had that, that Comcast phone call with Audible a couple times.
I had that Comcast phone call with Audible too.
Well, Amazon is known to have, it's just catered to the customer. So they did
whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say it was the Comcast call, but I have had to call customer service to get that refunded.
They apologized. I accidentally signed up for Audible when I was trying to buy just outright pay $10 for a book and I accidentally signed up.
Well, you should because it's cheaper. But then you just cancel immediately.
But I forgot
that part.
No, I canceled.
No.
But the cancel didn't stick. So it showed, I was like, my account was in horrible limbo.
That's no good.
Where my Audible account didn't look like I was signed into anything. Mm. Like I had any subscription, but I was getting billed. And I called them and they were like, well, we'll just refund everything. It's no problem. So they did.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
Nice.
Yeah. I wonder how many people don't notice is the question.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
That's how they make their money.
Yeah, sadly.
So that's it for news, unless anybody else has anything else.
There's that Apple-IBM deal.
Oh, the impossible deal.
Is it? I mean, like the unexpected deal?
It seems like 20 years ago it would have been impossible.
Yeah.
What's the details there? I don't know.
They struck an enterprise deal. Apple struck an enterprise deal with IBM so that IBM will be, or Apple iPads will be blessed within the enterprise where IBM is king.
So it'll be an appropriate outlet for their software as a service business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
that's interesting.
I mean, the iPad sales they were so big at first that they have to decline year over year, and they have been for 3 years. And I mean, they're still going up, but they're flatlining. So this is the new market. It seems like a good idea. Why not?
Cool. Norm, anything else? You good?
Nope. All good.
I'm gonna play some music. Oh, hey, we have more news. We are having a Comic-Con party.
Yeah, next week.
Next week. We'll talk about it again at the end, but I think a lot of people stop here and then don't listen to the last half of the podcast. Yes.
Why?
People do a lot of weird things.
Hmm. I hear the second half of this podcast is going to be great.
It was fabulous.
As well.
Friday, February, July 25th at San Diego Comic-Con, we are having a party. It's called Incognito. You can get details about it on the website. If you want to come and you are a tested premium member, you can go to a link on the website. Click on the link at the top of the page that says, hey, find out about the party. Go to the link there. There's an RSVP page. You have to RSVP. That'll put you in a faster line to get in. The party is a relatively small venue, so space is limited. First, you know, get there early if you want to make sure you get in. And it goes from like 9 until 2 a.m. So we'll be there all night. And we have cool stuff to unveil. Some of Adam's Comic-Con costumes are going to be on display at the party. I think we have like 10 or 12 costumes coming down. I don't know if we'll be able to get all of them out, including ones that he's wearing this year on the floor. And he's unveiling something new that he's been working on for a very long time. So it should be a good party.
Do you want to talk about that that pinball machine that they unveiled?
Oh, hold on.
Art Print. Haven't talked about CAX at all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hold on. Art Print. Also, if you are not a tested premium member and you want to be a tested premium member, right now we're running a special deal where if you sign up for the annual membership, you get a print that was designed by Adam. He did it. He showed it to Norm and I one day in his shop, and we were like,
there will be a video of this on the site next week about previewing the print.
The artwork is incredible. I mean,
you've seen it.
Yeah. Adam didn't do it. Did
yeah.
He?
Yeah.
He's that kind of artist?
He's a graphic designer.
That's insane.
In addition to all the other stuff. He did it. He came back from a flight Yeah. He came back from a flight where he was on the plane for like 6 hours or 8 hours or something and said, yeah, this is what I did while I was on the flight. And I was just like, dude, I hate you. You're a bad person. He did most of those drawings. And it's just a complete guide to this thing that we're going to unveil at the event on Friday. So you can find out about that at tested.com/membership. And if you want to know more. So anyway, I'm going to play the music and we'll talk about CAX. Jeremy, what's your website with the music interstitials from that you made years ago?
Podcastfantastic.com.
Thank you.
Logan used to have a thing where he would do a
Cat Fantastic.
Yeah, a trivia show called Cat Fantastic. So that's my play on that.
Great.
Oh, Cat Fantastic came before Podcast Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I remember these.
Yep. Those are good, man.
I'm gonna download some of these, play them on the and this is the Maximum PC theme. I forgot you composed that for us. That's real dirty and electronic.
Yeah, it's good. I actually composed that for P-Tom, PlayStation.
PlayStation, the official magazine?
Yeah, because they didn't like the first one I made for them.
Oh, so you just gave us their leftovers?
And fucking... then I made that one like because I was angry at them because they were rude to me about the first one.
Was and this so, when Rob Smith was in charge of PlayStation?
No, I think, I don't remember who was in charge of it. I was dealing with somebody, I won't mention his name.
Okay.
But probably,
it wasn't Rob Smith, I'm not, right?
No, Rob would have been very kind.
Okay. He's a nice man.
Anyway, the Max PC theme started out as just me being angry at P-Tom.
It's good.
It fit the show. It's an angry thing, and it ended up working great for you guys.
Yeah. You guys went to California Extreme. I wanted to go to California Extreme since I read about it in Nintendo Power in like the early 90s, probably.
You've never been?
I've lived here for 15 years now.
Why?
Something inevitably comes up either for a while. I just got the weekend wrong, didn't have it on the calendar.
Yeah.
The last, let's say, 7 years, something bad or I've had to travel or something has happened every week.
California Extreme is an arcade and pinball exposition.
It sounds like heaven.
It's cool. I mean, it's super crowded and it's like really loud, but there's some really cool talks and there's hundreds of pinball machines. Well, maybe 100 pinball machines and even more arcades, I would say.
People bring their arcade cabinets.
I guess arcades take less space.
Almost all of them are brought by the attendees.
Yeah.
But
fans.
Well, I should say, you know, probably half of them are brought by the attendees.
And like, if you want to go, you can, everything's set to free play.
Yep.
So you can just walk around and play games.
Yep, $40 to get in.
Yep. I think it's $35 if you buy tickets in advance, traditionally.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It was cool.
But you can also buy stuff. People sell stuff there, too, if you want to buy an arcade machine. Seems like a good place to do that.
That's true. Absolutely. Yep. But you guys had some news there. I didn't even know about it, and then I bumped into Norm.
Yeah. We just bumped into each other. I didn't know you were going to be there, because I thought you were in camping, but... as you know, Jeremy, now you can probably speak to this a lot better than we can. There are not many pinball manufacturers still left around.
There was only Stern for about 10 years,
right? And Stern
in Chicago.
They were an old company that was kind of reinherited and brought back to life using the Stern name.
Yep,
without the old licenses, and they're making new machines, good machines.
Yep.
For example,
They made the Star Trek machine.
Star Trek, TNG, AC/DC, Iron Man, Avengers.
Yep.
Okay.
And they're known for a lot of their digital. They use a lot of digital art, like for movies and stuff in the background. And then Jersey Jack came out last year as a major U.S. pinball operation based in Jersey. And their first machine was the Wizard of Oz machine,
ooh,
which was very notable because of how much new technology incorporated.
Yep.
Their LED lights and
microcontrollers,
like the big LCD screen. And you have one of those.
Yep.
I still have yet to play yours. And then aside from Jersey Jack and Stern, there are, I guess, some boutique ones.
Yeah. I mean, Jersey Jack sort of came along and reinvigorated I think they gave Stern some competition, and they showed that people will pay a lot of money for pinball machines.
Mm-hmm.
And
when made well,
Yeah. And so there have been some boutique guys that have popped up, and they're selling, you know, not 1,000 or 4,000, but they sell maybe 100.
Right.
But they sell them for $10,000 each.
Right.
And so there's a large number of boutique shops that have popped up, including...
So yeah, Skit B is a boutique shop that wants to ramp up. And they were at California Extreme to make a couple announcements. I think they are working to relaunch or reissue the Funhouse pinball game with all new mechanics or all new toys. And
Funhouse is the one with the scary clown puppet thing?
The Rudy. Scary ventriloquist.
Rudy.
His name's Rudy?
Yeah.
Terrifying. That pinball machine.
I never actually played
very
that.
Beloved. Like that, it's getting reissued. Medieval Madness, which is one of the most popular pinball games, is getting reissued. And is it you or is it Steve Lin who doesn't like it?
The reissue?
No, the original.
Oh.
Do you care for the original?
I like it, yeah.
Okay, Steve Lin doesn't care for the original. Yeah. I think he's...
It's hard to keep running, as I understand it.
I love that game, it's Medieval Madness. Game. I think it's one of the pinball machines that has the best story. It's the easiest to understand what you're doing in terms of, like, a lot of people just play pinball and just hit the flippers.
You mean it's not abstract?
It's a special game. It's the only game that Williams ever made that was actually scripted by Second City. Like, they outsourced it to a comedy club.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Second City is a famous Chicago comedy
and
club.
And did you know that one of the... I'm sure you know. One of the voices in Medieval Madness is Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Tina Fey does... You can actually... That track is isolated online. You can hear very clearly Tina Fey doing a voice of Damsel or something.
Because she was at Second City.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. But they're reissuing that. And like I said, it's... If you haven't played Medieval Madness, seek it out. It is a lot of fun.
It's a cool game.
You're attacking a castle, there are trolls that pop up, and great art in the background, drawn art. But Skit B is doing the Funhouse game, and then they're also doing a Jamie and Adam pinball machine,
ooh,
which we didn't know until a couple weeks ago.
What's it called?
It's called Experts of Dangerous. So it's not a Mythbusters themed one, but it's Jamie and Adam, and the idea is that they are fighting all the busters, all the test mannequins that they've destroyed over the years with weapons. And explosions.
This is from Pinball News.
This is
Medieval Madness, Tina Fey?
Not now.
Yeah.
I have a headache. Not now. I have third degree burns all up and down my body.
Oh, that wasn't even used.
No. Those are unused outtakes from Medieval. I like that you know without even half hesitation. Oh, I've not heard that one before.
I owned Medieval Madness. I have a headache is used, but the second one wasn't.
So, Experts of Dangerous. And the cool thing is that's going to be manufactured in the Jersey Jack facility.
Oh, so even though they're competitors, they're...
What will?
Experts of Dangerous.
It will?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, they made the announcement. Jersey Jack, they did a Skype call with Jack.
Huh.
And he gave a video tour of the facility, which is a massive warehouse.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And then... which we should visit sometime if we can. I would love to visit.
Where in Jersey is it? Do you know?
It's outside. I don't know.
It's not a big state.
It's true.
And the one section of that warehouse is now allocated, I think, several thousand square feet allocated to Skit B for manufacturing.
That's interesting because Stern is manufacturing Medieval Madness.
Oh. Well, there you go.
There you go.
So a lot of cool news.
What kind of games did you guys play? What did you play where at Cal Extreme?
Oh, I couldn't count.
High points?
You know what? When I walked in the door, all I wanted to see was The Matrix.
Is that set new?
It's not even new because it's unofficial, and officially it doesn't exist.
It's not licensed?
Oh, that's why there's a huge line for it.
Yeah.
No, I walked by it and
there
didn't
are,
realize.
No one I spoke to knows for sure how many there are, but the rumors maybe five have been
it's
contracted.
Like a fan project?
Yeah. So it's a conversion of a Johnny Mnemonic pinball game.
That sounds like a good use of a Johnny Mnemonic pinball table.
Wow.
You'd almost never know it.
If I'd known that, we would have done a video.
Because there's nothing on the playfield that says Johnny Mnemonic. But the cool thing is, I mean, they have totally redone everything. Like they've actually gone as far as to repaint the playfield, apply new clear, but they keep all the holes in the layout of Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah.
And they've converted like the Johnny Mnemonic glove toy to this ship.
Nebuchadnezzar,
yeah. They've done all new side art, all new sounds, all new software. It runs an entirely new processor, and they've coded from scratch an entire new rule set.
But all they kept are the ramps.
Well, the ramps and the general flow layout. Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. It looked legit when I walked by it, and there was a line. My housemate played it. I was like, "Wow, this looks like..." I thought they got a license.
It's pretty
cool.
A
Matrix game.
Yeah, but the games sell for you know, whatever you can privately arrange, but probably $20,000.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Huh.
That's very cool.
Did you play?
Yeah, couple games on there. They had a set to two ball, so it was fast games, but I got a multi-ball.
That's good.
It was pretty exciting.
You got a multi-ball.
Yeah, and I like Johnny Mnemonic to begin with.
Mm.
No one typically likes it. It's a horrible theme, but...
It's a terrible movie, but the pinball table was okay.
Pinball table, super fast.
Yeah.
I told Will when we were recording one of the episodes of our builds, which will air next week, so it's a little preview, that being at CAX made me want to buy a machine.
You came in... Hold on, let's... That is not what you said. You came in on Monday morning, you're like, I think I'm going to buy a pinball machine.
Mm-hmm. And this is like, after I saw your machine. And a lot of it's because you have your machines at home.
Mm-hmm. Saw my Star Trek.
I saw your Star Trek and I saw your...
You saw someone's reaction to my Star Trek.
Yes, but I saw my Star Trek. I saw your Star Trek and I like Star Trek.
Oh, it's a great
game. That's the machine I would want to get.
There are a bunch of next gens for sale right now for some unknown reason.
Really? That's one of the ones I made the most of. Because it was the right time where pinball...
No, they made a lot of them, but they made the most of the Addams Family.
Okay.
It was the same era.
There are a lot of Addams Families.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. When you talk about early 90s, going into a Chuck E. Cheese or like bowling alley, it was Addams Family, it was Theater of Magic, and it was Star Trek.
Yeah.
When you're buying a table, Jeremy, what do you look for? Assuming you know which table you want,
yeah.
If you're going to look at a table with the eye to purchase that table,
mm-hmm.
are you looking at, like, does it have cigarette smoke stuff on the glass? Is the side art damaged? Like,
you want to play it and make sure it all works right.
Right.
But the thing that I would definitely look for is check the circuit boards in the back for any battery acid corrosion.
Okay.
Because the batteries are mounted directly on the circuit board.
Like the button batteries?
No, double A's.
Oh.
And if you don't change them, which most... not most, but a lot of people don't do.
Mm-hmm.
They just drain and they just drip.
Those are the ones that save high scores and stuff like that?
Yep.
Wow. So in your time owning a Star Trek and the condition of your machine, it's fantastic. What has the maintenance been like and how much maintenance?
If you get your machine working well, it's probably, and you play it,
mm-hmm.
they're great. I mean, they practically, you know, require no maintenance except for maybe changing the rubbers and balls once a year.
Oh,
But if you need help, there's
yes,
plenty.
Well, he made a funny.
There's plenty of online sources for help.
Rubbers and balls.
Yeah, steel balls. Balls of
steel. About $4,000 for one of those machines.
For what?
For a Star Trek.
Yep, maybe 45, maybe 35, somewhere in there.
And I saw one local.
But, like, you know, a few years ago, they were less than three, so.
So maybe it's wait it out.
No, I'm saying it's going to go higher.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not like around California Extreme or around big events.
What
you know?
If they find out
it's high demand?
And I'm telling you, there's a lot on the market right now. Maybe it's the new Stern Star Trek or who knows why.
Oh,
but
geez, don't tell me how.
What if they find out that pinball causes cancer and people stop playing pinball? Then the price will go down.
Are you trying to short the pinball market?
Maybe. Why not?
Pinball causes cancer.
What if they find out that pinball causes poor attention span and, you know, cats and dogs living together? The whole decline of Western civilization.
You would never pinball. Buy a machine remotely. You'd want to see it in person.
No, I've bought several machines remotely. I just ask for a lot of pictures and I just take a, you know, little bit of faith. Because you can often get them. There's something called the Northern California pinball tax, which means you're going to pay a little bit more for games here because...
There's a community.
There's a community and there's a lot of demand. And they all started, you know, a lot of them are back out in the Midwest.
How much does it cost to ship a table? A few grand?
It's been going up, unfortunately. People usually use North American van lines, and it costs probably $400 or $500 now.
Do they have expertise in moving pinball tables? Do they have somebody that's like their pinball guy?
No. Well, there is an agent who everyone uses. Her name is Michelle Bianchi.
Okay.
And, it's, you know, it's just an agent, though. They use the same movers.
Okay.
But they ship them legs on. Super easy.
There's a machine on Craigslist right now, locally, that has a ton of work. Rebuilt flippers, new DMD, LED, all LED lights, new playfield glass, new balls, new core mechanisms. Do you care if it's basically been completely refurbished?
Yeah, sure. That's great.
That's a good thing.
That's a good
Absolutely. Because then you don't have to do the work.
All super bright LEDs.
LEDs, there's an argument.
New wiring harness for the cannons.
The best thing about LEDs is they use less power.
Mm.
And these old games that were meant to last 4 years and are now 20, 25 years old, it's hard on them to have all that power coursing through them.
Wow. What are your thoughts on color DMDs?
I love the color. I love those guys. Such an amazing product. Yeah. It's FPGA based. It's like an incredible work of code.
So you buy one specifically for a machine, or can you recode them?
They have made a handful, maybe 6-8 actual games.
Okay.
Where they've colorized them, and it's a meticulous, tedious process where they actually have to go through every frame of every bit of animation and hand pixel the color.
Mm-hmm.
But once that's done, they ship that, and you can get that firmware and install it. But you can install it in any game and set it to a solid color.
Got it.
But it's not obviously colorized. Right.
No. The colorized versions. And the Star Trek is one of the games that's colorized. And when I saw that in person, I'm like,
yeah, it's cool.
Wow, it never looked like this. And then when we're talking about the DMDs, this is the backboard where you can play the virtual games, you know, when you go on the way missions and where the score gets. Yeah, yeah, that screen. Oh, God.
You should get a game. You should totally get a game.
It's expensive.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, it's like an investment. I mean, it's not a sure thing, but if you pay a decent, fair price, you will easily get that money back, if not make some money.
I'll tell you this, my house does not deserve a game.
I think you should go go to Free Gold Watch every week for a month. Yeah. And if you do that, then maybe you should think about getting a game, Norm.
Put it on quarter play in your house.
Put it on quarter. That's the dickest move ever.
You give him four balls.
That's the...
Here's the thing. You don't want a bunch of fucking dirty gamers down there with beers and their sticky fingers all over your tables.
There's something to be said for paying for a game. It raises the stakes.
Yeah.
And if you get a match or you hit replay, it means something.
Or you make it cash games.
For amusement only.
No, you can take that sign off in your house.
For amusement only.
You can take that sign off inside your house.
That's why they were illegal for so many years.
Yeah. Wow. $5 says I beat you on this.
Well, I'll pick your brain more about this offline.
Off the lines.
Sure. But CAX is fun.
If you're in Northern California at the end of summer, would you recommend people go?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Middle of summer, I guess.
Yeah, if you like arcades, even if you don't like, you know, if you only have a passing interest in pinball, the amount of arcades there, a lot of weird Japanese stuff, a lot of rare things.
Some rare stuff.
Like, did you guys stay late?
No.
I had to drive home.
Yeah.
We're old.
They're open until 2 a.m.
Yeah, apparently it gets crazy at night. People go out, get a little loaded, come back, play some games.
Well, the time, because it's the location the past couple of years is the Hyatt Regency in Santa Clara, which is the convention center. It's a big hotel, but it's also right next to the new stadium, the new football stadium.
Oh.
So traffic could get, I don't know what events, they'll probably want to pack that stadium throughout the year. Summer is not football.
Could have a Britney Spears concert there.
But hopefully they don't time it poorly. In the future. But a lot of people book hotel rooms and just for that weekend, even if they're local, so they can, you know, go hang out at the pool day, go back and forth, and then not have to make that hour drive back.
I think there's a pretty good Denny's down the street, if I understand.
IHOP's
right there, yeah. You got a lot of choices. Chili's.
We hope you're enjoying this trip down memory lane with us. Boy, did we get lots of our speculation wrong, but it was so much fun discussing those topics back then. And I want to let you know that this is only a test. Our podcast is made possible with support from Caseta Smart Lighting Control from Lutron, pioneers in smart home technology. A lot of people think you need smart bulbs to get smart lighting, but there's a smarter way. Caseta Smart Dimmers and Switches replace the switch in your wall so all of your lights controlled by that switch will act smart. Think about all the places where one switch controls multiple bulbs, like your ceiling lights, your chandeliers, your bathrooms, and more. With Caseta, you save money by replacing just the switch instead of replacing all those bulbs. Smart bulbs are only smart when the switch is on. If someone flips it off, you can say goodbye to that smart control and connectivity. But Caseta switches are always smart, even if the switch is off. With Caseta dimmers, you don't need to buy smart bulbs to enjoy smart lighting. You can actually get the best of both worlds. Smart lighting control from an app or your voice and control right at the switch. You know, it's the holidays, and one of my favorite movies to watch during the holidays is Home Alone. And Macaulay Culkin, I wish Kelly McAllister had this feature, because Caseta has a smart away feature that randomly turns lights on and off during the evening to make it look like your home when you're not. Get smart lighting the smart way with Caseta by Lutron Smart Switches. Learn more about Caseta at lutron.com/test. Once again, that's lutron.com/test. Let's return to this episode.
Norm, you're testing the Surface. Well, we've already talked about the Surface Pro 3.
Not much.
Not much at all. I'm testing the Surface Pro 3. This is what I'm bringing to Comic-Con along with my MacBook. This is a loaner from our friends at Ars Technica. This is the exact unit they gave out at the Surface event that we didn't get the chance to go to because it was in New York. It's the i5 version, and we've gone over the details of the differences between this and the Surface Pro, but it's a big upgrade over the Surface Pro 2 as opposed to the Surface Pro 1 to 2.
We didn't test the Surface Pro 2, right?
We didn't. We did the original Surface Pro.
And then the Surface 2 RT.
Yes.
Or whatever.
There's a much improved keyboard, which I'm actually using the type. I still think they expanded the area of the trackpad, but I still think it's not as usable as a mouse. I would use a mouse with this.
I thought it wasn't as bad as the previous ones, but it's still not.
The tracking is okay, but it's the clickiness.
I can't right click with it.
Yeah.
And you need to right click with Windows.
I can't right click with it either.
Oh yeah. That's weird.
The pinch, I mean, it having a touchscreen, I love Windows with the touchscreen.
Smudges don't bother you?
Not at all. No. I mean, I use Windows touchscreen.
Smudges bother me.
Complementing the keyboard and mouse. I use it to pinch the zoom. Like if I'm browsing a website and I'm on, for example, you know,
especially at your res, you're running at the,
yeah, at the full rate of res.
You couldn't read that text the way it is right now. Can you pinch to zoom in Chrome?
Yeah. So I'm in Chrome right now. And, for example, if I open an image, right. Or video, even anything being in Chrome, like, being able to pinch to zoom an image, it's what I naturally feel like,
but
I want to do.
Wouldn't you rather not have to pinch to zoom? Like, wouldn't you rather that be a resolution you can see?
No, but I mean, even if it's, you know, a small image that's, when you're playing, even if you're on a 1080p monitor, there's sometimes there's images that you want to get close up on.
Can you double tap paragraphs to make it fill the screen?
Yes, iOS? You can. Well, maybe not. Maybe
that's not a paragraph that would work. It's not the right kind of div. No. Do the... Nope.
Nope.
That's a Chrome
in Explorer, but I don't use any Explorer.
Right.
Do that. But
I was super impressed. It comes with this new pen.
The demo that you were impressed with is the demo that I've actually been using.
Like using not to demo, but as a feature.
Yes. Where if I'm in Windows, because the Windows 8 desktop, 8.1 desktop, which is how I compete with this. I don't live in the metro area, in the modern area, whatever it's called. But I have the pen out because I actually do use the pen sometimes to tap on links and to identify things. The pen has three buttons. The back button is this awesome button that launches OneNote, and it's purple because OneNote is a color. So one tap on the button launches OneNote. And there's a desktop version of OneNote, which is free, and also the Metro version of OneNote. And the pen accuracy, the latency, and the accuracy is sufficient enough for me to actually take notes with this and to write. And the great thing about OneNote, and OneNote's been around for a while.
For a long time.
This version of OneNote is that I can write and draw stuff, and then I can actually select it with the pen. And then it's a vector, so I can actually scale it and move it. Which, when you're creating notes and diagrams in a document alongside, you know, drawings next to text, you can't do that easily in a Word document. Now, when taking notes in like a college lecture, for example, I would still want to type, and you can still type. You can still, you know, tap and start typing and create, you know, but to be able to underline the stuff you're typing and to cross out and to circle and highlight, that integrates the laptop typing experience with an actual physical notepad experience. And then we can export an email and share with OneNote, which is on, you know, iOS and Android.
It's like tablet, notepad, laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. The ability to take a screen grab of anything, whether you're on a website or you're in any other app, by double tapping the button and then drawing the area you want to select and then importing that and annotating that and sharing that, I think is wonderful.
Is that only good for, like, is that something normal people are going to use or just us because we have to send screen grabs with, like, notes on our webpage?
Well, remember, you asked Microsoft, the ideal user for this is students and office.
That's
and
true.
Productivity. So students, I can totally imagine people clipping and taking notes and sharing stuff.
How does it share that? Is it just a JPEG that it sends?
It's a full JPEG.
Okay.
Yeah. So it just rasterizes as a JPEG. But if you share as a OneNote document, then, and they have OneNote, then they can move the vectors around too.
Hmm. That's interesting.
If this pen is the killer app, mm-hmm. it means Steve Jobs was wrong.
Yes.
Because he famously went against this direction.
Yes.
When they came out with the phone and the iPhone. And he said, we have a pointing device. We have five of them on each hand.
And this doesn't get rid of that.
I see what you're doing here, and I think, wow, there's some use cases I haven't considered.
A real pen would be nice. And a higher resolution, larger. Like the thing that immediately jumped out to me when I used that for like 10 minutes yesterday when we were shooting something is your coffee's under the microphone. is the size of the screen it's a big enough screen that I could actually see myself writing on it.
And
aspect ratio is less important. It's just the amount of surface area on the screen.
Well, the aspect ratio informs the actual writing space. Because
that's true.
If the screen was 16:9, you're going to have to, your writing space is much more limited because of you don't want to reach the edges.
That thing is comparable in size to like a legal pad. Mm-hmm. Is where I ended up. Whereas the iPad Air is small for something to write on.
Now, I still don't think this is going to be the exact type of thing where you'd have a legal pad where you'd hold with one hand and write holding the Air and write with the others, like you would with a Field Notes, notebook.
You tuck that in right here. You put it in your...
I think it's too heavy still. I mean, when you're sitting, yes, but when you're standing, it's...
But that's kind of how you do a legal pad. And you'd probably take the keyboard off too, I think.
Oh, I'm pressing keys. It's okay if it's on the back. These don't respond.
Yeah, it knows it's smart on that. So.
I think that it's a put on the table and flatten it to the canvas and then write on the canvas or a desk. But I think holding it, it's still a little too heavy holding it.
Does this just rip off?
It just pops off, yeah. There you go. There goes the keyboard pops off. I think with one hand writing, it's a little tough.
I wonder if this product survives the 18,000.
I really hope it does. I think the next gen version of this, when the next Intel, the big talk processor update for Ultrabooks comes out next year on the Intel side and gives it battery life that's actually respectable.
What's the battery life like so far?
You
have an Ivy Bridge MacBook Air,
mm-hmm.
and which is like 10 hours, right?
It's at this point, my MacBook Air is like 6 hours, 6.5 hours.
Okay.
This is in that range.
Okay. New. I you realize somebody's going to go back and listen to what you said about the two previous services and pull out you saying, I think the next one's going to be the one. But I don't know. What did you think about Gabe's complaints from Penny Arcade?
I've accidentally hit the Windows button. So I want to see that update where it knows when the digitizer is hovering above the
when you're
screen.
Using the pen.
Then it negates the Windows button on the side. And you kind of have, you're forced into even though I'm right-handed, I'm forced into that, that aspect ratio, or this orientation. I couldn't like flip it around because of the way the keyboard flips under and the way the kickstand works. So it's always going to be to my right.
Can you actually, is the kickstand sturdy enough that you can rest your hand on the screen?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh?
Yes.
Can you write at the same size that you would write on a piece of paper?
Yes.
And it's legible.
Yes. So there's a thin, you can, you know, do you different pick colors and your the stroke size and the thinnest stroke size. I mean, I learned to write pretty small for note taking. And it is still my...
It's not as clear as writing with a pencil or a pen.
Honestly...
But it's pretty good.
What I want more than anything is a piece of software that works like SketchUp in that you can... That lets you turn line drawings that you make on a tablet into... although maybe I don't need that. I don't know.
You don't know what you want.
I don't know what I want. I want something that does the hard stuff for me. That's what I'm looking for.
I just want to run CRAN physics on this. You know those games where you draw things and they become physics objects?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's in the Windows App Store. The Windows Store.
CRAN physics.
Wow. We're building a printer bot, Norm.
Yes. We'll be done tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow.
Talk
the
about
the last episode's on the
time.
Site tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah. Tell me about it. We've done two more builds. All done. Can't talk about them yet. Printer bot's really neat. It's a neat little printer. We talked about it a little tiny bit last week.
So why'd you opt for that one?
It was relatively inexpensive.
$500.
$530 shipped.
Unassembled. Now it's only another 50 or 60. $60 to get it assembled.
Yeah.
I think it's worth building.
I mean.
For the knowledge.
For the experience.
If you're mechanically inclined at all. Like if you watch us build that and you're screaming at your TV. That probably means you're okay to build your own. It's if you've never built a 3D printer before, it's going to break. And when it breaks, if you have to figure out how it works to fix it, you're going to be one step behind somebody who already understands how the pieces go together.
How likely is it that you'll have to fix it?
100%.
Okay.
At some point you're going to mess up and the extruder is going to get clogged. You're going to have to take the extruder apart and clean the gears out or something like that. And in order to do that, you'll need to know how it goes together and how to put it back together.
Okay.
Or the belt's going to need retensioning, or there are a lot of moving pieces, and anytime there's moving pieces, there's stuff that can go wrong. The instructions for that particular printer aren't great. But yeah, it seemed like a good place to start. And it's inexpensive because of the size that it prints, but the capabilities are in line with anything else. And it has a heated build platform upgrade. So if we want to use it for other stuff, then we can. I also, honestly, I like that it's open. So if we use that to do mystery objects, then you can get better angles on the
build. Oh, I see what you mean. That kind of open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we bought it for reasons that normal people will never buy it, and also some reasons that are pretty good. Yep. I think when you look at it as a thing that you might buy for your house, we had somebody in here yesterday who has, a fifth grader. A
10-year-old
son who's going between fifth and sixth grades this summer. And he's looking at, we get a lot of questions from people who have kids that are that age who want to buy a 3D printer. And I think it's a really good age to introduce kids to that concept, because it's at a period of time when they know, like, you can say, look, this hot end is 220 degrees Celsius. It is going to instantly, before you feel anything, burn the living shit out of you if you touch it.
That's the extruder.
The extruder end. Do not ever touch the hot end of the extruder. It will hurt you very badly. It's not as hot as a soldering iron, but for all intents and purposes, same ballpark, right? So they know that. They are smart enough to avoid pinching hazards and all that stuff, because you can hurt yourself with these. They can apply enough torque when they're moving the print heads or going up and down that if your finger's in the wrong place, you could do serious damage. But they also have the basic capabilities to, the spatial skills are good enough to learn 3D modeling and stuff like that. And they also have enough time, because we learned about 3D printers the hard way over 2 years. 1 week at a time, doing one print a week, basically, or two prints a week. But, you know, if you're 10 years old, the amount of time I sunk into that over 2 years, they could easily do in a summer. And then at the end of that summer, you have a basic level of expertise, and can turn things that you dream up in your head and on your computer into physical objects in a easy, repeatable way. And I think that's a neat skill to have. And 550. I mean, you can get their printers that are range from $250 to, you know, $20,000, $250 to $20,000. I think $250 to $500 is a pretty reasonable price for that. And if you put it together, your kid, it's a good project for you. I mean, mm-hmm. you can all work together and everybody learns some stuff. So yeah, if you have a kid who's into that, and like what I usually tell people is to give them one of the free CAD 3D modeling programs, whether it's SketchUp, there's a demo version that's free for the first like 8 hours, and then it goes to a freeware version where they strip out some of the more advanced features, or Autodesk's 1-2-3D Design and 1-2-3D Sculpt. Both, all of those programs will let you build models with different kind of paradigms. 1-2-3D Design and SketchUp are kind of like drafting tools that you can then add dimensions to and export an STL file that your 3D printer can print. 1-2-3D Sculpt is like a kind of nerby modeling thing where you can use sculpting tools on blobs to make monster heads and stuff like that. Like, cool stuff. Have them use those tools, and if they express interest in it, then you can either start sending shit off to Shapeways to print at $70 a pop, or you can buy a printer for $550 and all of a sudden, you know, and the plastic, the PLA plastic is $30 a kilogram or something like that. It's really inexpensive. So yeah, it's a neat little printer. I hooked Octoprint up to it. Octoprint is a web-based printer front end for printers, for 3D printers. So you basically can send G-code files over to it, I haven't added the slicer for it yet, but you can even slice on a Raspberry Pi or Windows machine, or I think I have it running on a Mac right now, but I'm gonna move it to Raspberry Pi eventually. It'll shoot time lapses and the whole thing of your prints as they happen, and lets you monitor remotely your printer, which I think is pretty neat too. Yeah.
Jeremy, do you remember back over 5 years ago now, when we were about the future, mm-hmm. when you came downstairs and you told me there's this thing called the MakerBot. You wanted to get in on one? Want to share one?
That sounds like me.
Yes. We're gonna split the money.
Oh, we were gonna split.
Was that on a cupcake?
The first MakerBot?
On the very first MakerBot.
Yeah.
And
God, that had to be right before we left.
So glad we didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way every year though, because they keep getting better.
I think it's still something that requires noodling. Yeah. Like, but the first cupcake and even the Thingamatic, like the experience I had with those was real rough. And even the replicator one out of the box was pretty rough. And over the last year and a half or 2 years, we've gotten to a place where it's pretty good.
Aren't we at the maximum or the minimum, whatever you want to say, the minimum resolution for PLA at this point?
I think for fused deposition using plastic on a spindle, mm-hmm. we are, which basically that is all the printers that have material that feeds in a linear form, gets heated up and forced through a little spigot. We're at the high end of resolution for that unless something changes or material changes.
So you want to wait till the Form 1 printers, the SLA ones.
The Form 1 Plus.
Form 1 Plus printers get into the, $1,000 range.
I was kind of hoping we'd see, and this is pipe dream, I realize, but I would like to wait until we see color ones. Full color, 3D printers,
whew.
And whatever that means, if it inkjet sprays it on the outside or if it can somehow inject color into the plastic as it extrudes. Something like that would be great because I see the analog as dot matrix progressing through inkjet, and eventually we had color printers everywhere, and I assume it'll happen. I just don't know when.
It's a ways off. It adds a whole other layer. I mean, you can get that if you spend $100,000.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe even $30,000. I don't know how much. I've never priced out those objects. Most of those work, I think, by doing, they have like a base material that gets sintered. So a laser heats it up until it melts, and they squirt ink on it as it's cooling in place or whatever.
Yeah. So is it on the exterior only, or is it embedded into the plastic?
I think it can go through the whole process. The color, you mean?
Yeah.
I think you can put it anywhere in the plastic, but probably you only do the exterior just for simplicity. Norm, you were just checking the time.
There's a patent also that gets expired next year, I think.
Oh, on the color stuff?
Yeah, on one of the high-end printer technologies, objects.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. I'm really feeling like I want one. I needed one recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You helped me out.
I built a reamer for you.
Which is, like, I've never wanted a 3D printer more than making this tiny little...
It's a really dumb thing.
Little 30 millimeter tall piece of plastic square.
Yeah.
And I'd pay $1,000 for the ability to make that.
Well, but you checks are payable to Will Smith.
Well, here's the other thing, Jeremy. You could have done the same thing with laser cutter.
No.
Why couldn't you have done the same thing with the laser cutter and stacked them up and glued them together?
Because I don't think you could have. The tolerances. So, okay, let's explain the problem. You're building game frames. Yep. You're assembling them.
Yeah.
There's a milled grid that's a sheet of what, like 10 millimeter thick plastic?
If you're watching the mm-hmm. the video, it's like a quarter inch or half inch thick plastic, mm-hmm. and it's got this grid of holes in it.
And had someone CNC mill out a grid of 16 by 16?
Yeah, so 256 holes, and they're milled, so there's little hairs of plastic left over.
Yes.
And I clean them out with a screwdriver.
So, because if the plastic's left in and it breaks loose, then it looks bad on the final...
Yeah, potentially, there's a piece of...
Because you're a craftsman,
Because I'm a... Well, yes.
Yeah. Artisan electronics.
Because I'm concerned about my customer's satisfaction.
Excellent. We approve.
So, I wanted to make a little reamer to clean those holes out for me instead of a screwdriver, and Will made one perfectly. Using
and so is that and you could have designed it so that would fit into the end of a screwdriver to make it easy to
that's Will's idea. Yeah. I said
I'll print you a handle if you want.
So why couldn't that be printed cut from laser cutter?
Because in order the tolerances I got on that, those are just being held in by friction right now. So I got that to fit perfectly, basically as perfectly as you can with the printers that we have.
Yep.
And I don't think you could do that and glue it evenly, given what I know about gluing stuff. Well,
you're
from the
talking
last
about you need to be.
It has to be super precise.
The thickness of the material just needs to be. Yeah. Fill up at least the inch and a half that you have here, or the inch you have here.
Yeah, but if you got the layers out of whack even a little bit, it wouldn't work.
I'm saying you need to make sure it's an inch.
Yeah.
But the acrylic can cut half. Quarter inch acrylic, and if you put it on the end of a stick,
that's true.
You just push it all the way through.
Four or five of them. So
or just one of them.
So the interesting thing about this wasn't the end product, really. It was figuring out how to make that. Because my initial thought was, oh, okay, I'll just scan the design, scan the grid that you left here for me to mess around with, convert that to SVG, import it into SketchUp.
You have a scanner?
Yeah, we have a scanner.
I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, you have a phone, so you have a scanner.
Oh, you can. Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
I put a dime on the top of it, took a picture.
Yeah.
So I had scale. And then I thought I'll bring it to Photoshop.
Oh, I see.
Move that to Illustrator.
Yeah.
Make an SVG, because then I have a vector. And once I have the vector, I can just put it into SketchUp and extrude it up and it'll be fine. That didn't work at all. I mean, I could have made it work, but it was going to take hours. And
was it because of the angle?
Getting the lens warp from just the iPhone camera.
Yeah.
Correcting that was hard. So even though I took it as square on as I could, some of the squares ended up being bad. The shadows inside the squares made it impossible to get a good clean edge on more than one or two of the 256 cells.
So then calipers.
My caliper battery died, so I called Jeremy and he measured.
I calibrated.
You knew how big it was supposed to be. 95 yes. millimeters or 9.5 millimeters.
No. I knew they were 1 centimeter apart, and then when I got home, I calipered the distance, the actual.
So they're actually, so once you said it was 9.5 millimeters from edge of square to edge of square, I started thinking, how did they make this? So they actually, it's one centimeter is the distance of the center of each square to the distance of the center of the next square.
Yes.
And it's... Yes.
So that means the thickness of the walls is 0.5 millimeters combined on either side.
So 1 millimeter.
So 1 millimeter total. And then I was like, there's a vertical mill that just is coming down, reaming out the inside and then lifting up and going on to the next one. So how do they do this? The trick is it has a little bit of a curve on the corners. The corners aren't square. No. So I had to figure out how to mimic that circle. And to do that, I just looked at what milling bits they would use and figured it was a 2 millimeter milling bit and made a 2 millimeter circle, radius circle, put that on the corners, extruded it up, printed out 10 different versions to see which size fit. And it fit perfectly. Once I had the 9.5 millimeter side and the 2 millimeter bit, it's amazing. And it friction fits into place and you can put them next to each other and everything.
Yep.
It was very satisfying. To figure that out. I had a lot of fun.
Great, man.
So thank you.
You helped me out.
Hope you enjoy your reaming.
So yeah, to the point, I'm now really seriously considering a 3D printer.
It's
laser cutter.
Obviously I want a laser cutter.
You're gonna do so much more than laser cutter.
I think both.
They cost 20 times the amount of money.
Yes, yes, they do.
The interesting thing about this though is that I got the prints were, it printed stuff the size it was supposed to print. That has traditionally been really hard on these FDM model printers.
Yeah. They expand and...
But yeah, because they expand and contract based on the heat.
So did you make adjustments or just get lucky?
No, the software is now good enough that it's modeling the heat.
Nice.
On the slicing side. So that wouldn't have worked. If I was 2 years ago, I don't think I could have done that.
Does the ambient temperature of the room also affect that?
Shouldn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, a tiny amount, but not for something like this. I'm sure you're not getting 100 micron precision, but you're getting actually, you probably are getting 100 micron precision. You're not getting 50 micron precision. I was really surprised that it worked without having to tweak sizes up and down. It was fun.
Cool.
So like I said, enjoy your reamer. Jeremy,
thank you.
Do you want to talk about the LG smartwatch anymore? Anything, any new updates?
We haven't talked about it at all.
Okay, Google, Xbox, turn off. Yes.
Anyway, so the watch right now is about 5 feet from your head, 4 feet from your head. Say it again.
Okay, Google.
Yes.
Pornography.
It was activating. Okay, Google. Okay, Google.
Naked boobies.
This is a bad demo. I liked your.
Okay, Google. There it goes. It needs to be out of sleep mode. Yeah.
Interesting.
Nope.
So what are you?
It's Google Now. It's Google Now on the wrist.
How does it work in the real world?
It just pulls.
Is that what you're using it for, Google Now, more often than not?
Yes. Yeah. I use it for phone calls. I use it for, can
you take
emails?
Phone calls on it, Dick Tracy style? Can I do a Google Hangout with your watch?
Nope.
Oh. That's got to be coming.
I use it for email. Well, there's a microphone, but no speaker on it.
Yeah. Well, no camera.
And no camera.
Mm.
use it for whatever can send a push notification on my Android tray, notification tray. It'll send it here, and I can interact with it.
Can you limit that? Can you say I don't want notifications from Facebook on my Smart?
No. If notifications pop up here, it'll pop up here.
Okay. Same as Pebble on iOS.
Up. Yeah.
Really?
The big problem right now is that, like in Google Now, if you swipe stuff away, like I'm done with it for now, you can't bring it back manually. Like you have to wait until Google Now thinks that you want it again. So you can't say this is a list of things I always want to show. I always want to show stocks or I always want to show
weather.
Weather, I think it pops up pretty frequently, but you can.
Does that take it away on all your devices? So if you wipe it away from the watch, does it go away on your phone and your tablet too? And Chrome? Because it does on the tablet right now. Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. Is this a product you like? Or is it something you see like the promise of, but aren't convinced of right now? You're checking right now.
I like, but I see the battery life is the biggest problem.
And can you use the screen outside?
I've been using it on a very low brightness setting, and no.
It doesn't have a camera, so it can't automatically brighten up? Does it have a light sensor?
It does brighten up.
Okay.
It does brighten up.
Well, what do you mean? How often do you have to charge it?
Once a day.
And that's not enough? Or
once a day is enough.
Okay. Well, then what's the problem? Because you have to charge your phone once a day, at least.
Charging my phone once a day.
Not this phone.
Come on, though. I mean, when you get home, you're ready for the end of the day. You can plug it in.
And take your pants off, plug your phone in.
Yeah.
So, for example, next week we're going to Comic-Con. I don't know if I want to bring this for Comic-Con because I have to bring the charger.
You have to bring a special charger. You're driving a van.
It has a special charger?
The way it charges, it can be waterproof, is that it comes with a dock, a magnetic dock.
Oh.
And it's not micro USB to plug in.
Is it inductive?
No. It's
just like the Pebble. Yeah,
it's just contact points. But they're relatively water resistant.
You have to take it. You're taking a van. You have plenty of room.
Yeah. I'm gonna take it. I am going to take it. But it's one of those things that if you're going on a vacation... Then you just got to pack the charger.
You're on vacation, you don't need a watch.
Can I hold it?
Yes, you may.
I'll see how heavy it is.
It's not that heavy at all. I like the Pebble's design more, and its ergonomics more.
I think that stuff will come. Steel.
Like this being the very first one, it really feels like a small. It feels as clunky as the old iPod Nano with the wrist straps.
Mm. It kind of looks like that too. It's all boxy and square.
Yeah. Yep.
I think as this proves out as a category, we'll see manufacturers making eventually this will just be a platform into which watches can be placed.
I also think that it could benefit from having physical buttons. I think the touch only interface is a mistake. Mm.
How do you turn it on? Does it just turn on if there's charge?
It's on all the time, and it goes in dark mode.
Can you put it in airplane mode?
Yeah, you can swipe down and mute or. And it doesn't connect to Wi-Fi. It only connects to Bluetooth.
Huh.
I thought the circular one is so much more sexy than this one.
The Motorola 360.
That almost makes me want to go Android.
Wow.
I mean, because I've never seen a circular display before.
It's like 2.5 centimeters. It's huge.
Oh. What? Are you serious? That's no good.
It's not quite that
big. It's not that big.
It's close. It's big.
Well... I thought that was super cool. And I understand it's super fat too, but as these things get thinner and potentially, if Apple were to release something thin and circular, I think that's going to look really cool.
I think if Apple was to do it, I think they would do it with a more integrated unit and maybe an unconventional screen. Also, we didn't talk, did we talk about this? We did talk about it last week, but you weren't here, Jeremy. But did you see that video of the purported iPhone 6 screen, sapphire display?
The sapphire glass.
Is that the hammer?
And the knife.
And the trying to bend?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, I mean, the thing everyone is saying is it's unscratchable, right? And that's great, but I don't have a problem scratching my screen. I haven't for years.
You have a problem?
I have a problem with shattering my screen.
Go ahead.
Now, if this... new sapphire glass is unshatterable.
Yeah, unbreakable.
That's going to be huge.
Or if it's at least to a shatter resistant to a point where they can say they'll cover for free any repair.
Sure.
That is a huge, huge selling point.
No, that's a game changer.
They know, Apple knows, like I said this last time, Apple knows how many people come in with the shattered screens, and they know that huge gray market for screen repair. If they can sell you a phone and built into the price is come in anytime. If it breaks, we will replace the screen for free. That is huge.
Yeah.
Here's
so much better than water resistance.
And here's the thing about you say you don't scratch your phone. Let's go out in the sunlight and look at the micro scratches on your screen.
Yeah.
It takes about 5 minutes. Like taking it in and out of your pocket is enough to scratch the screen. And it's one of the things that makes your screen, your glasses, whatever, look less clear the longer you have them.
Now, they already use sapphire glass on the iPhone 5S in the camera and also the button.
Touch ID.
And in the previous buttons on the iPhone 5.
I see.
If you buy, I have not seen, I did a Google search, I have not seen anyone with a broken button with the 5S.
I don't know how you can break that button.
Well, in the past.
What in the hell?
I'm saying in the iPhone 5, many people crack their buttons.
What?
Yeah.
If you search,
yes, iPhone
Jibo
5. Cracked home button.
Oh my God.
How do they crack the button?
If you can search anything in Google and you're going to find some results. If you search for.
But iPhone 5S have never seen any instance.
Oh. Well, I'm just saying the scratch resistance does not sell me. Micro scratches don't bother me because I don't see them.
Oh, I see them.
They might be subliminal, but they don't bother me.
The eyes of every child disappointed by a scratched iPhone screen.
But. Shadow resistance, big. And, you know, that would be cool.
Try scratching up your lens.
Let me scratch my button. No, I'm not going to scratch my lens. I scratch my button.
Try scratching up your button.
No, don't do it.
Don't do it.
I don't have the protection plan. I'll do it 2 weeks before the new phone comes out.
You go caseless. Look at you.
Fuck yeah, I go caseless.
No way. I will never go caseless.
Raw dog, man. That's the only way to live.
I did it for generations.
Yeah.
And I always crack my phone. I drop my phone at least once every 2 months.
The last time I broke a phone was the iPhone 1 on the way to E3 in 2008.
I must be a klutz because I'm telling you, I can't do it. I'm at the playground. I'm at home. It doesn't matter. The phone falls, and I just say, well, that's why I have a case.
Do you live a more active lifestyle?
Do you want to know the secret?
Yeah, that's clear.
The secret over the years, every time I ever broke a phone was when I dropped it, and I put my foot out to catch it, thinking, I'm going to cushion the blow.
Oh, you made it worse.
But actually just kick it even further. So I stopped doing that. No smashed phones.
That's funny.
Poor Joey. Every time he gets a new phone, it's like 2 weeks from the time he gets the phone until it explodes. He's worse than you.
Really?
Yeah, Adam's pretty bad too. But he definitely has a more active lifestyle. Let's see. Do we want to talk about this other stuff? Or we want to save it for a future time.
Other things I've been testing. I've testing the
TV antenna.
TV antenna, which I mentioned earlier,
the wire cutter
frequency cable cutter. It's $100.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. My parents bought 3 of them.
It's 1 month's worth of cable.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want to pay for cable anymore, so they bought 3 of them.
That's good. Nobody should pay for cable.
What are you talking about?
TV antenna.
We were talking about this earlier.
Right, I'm saying this is one I've been testing. It's fantastic. $100 comes with your coaxial cable. It has an interesting shape, which kind of, if you watch the video for the Aereo, the tiny antennas they have, which are amazing design.
Yeah.
It's like that shape.
So if I go from bunny ears to this, what do I get that I didn't get before?
You don't need to go from bunny ears to this if your bunny ears provide you with the best, perfect digital signals. And it's both, they tested both number of channels you get, because in the Bay Area, there's actually a lot of digital signals, mm-hmm. and also the amount of interruptions, because some channels will broadcast in 480, some in 720, some in 1080i. Mm. And if you look at this, the poor signal in 720, the digital interruption is pretty gnarly.
What's digital interruption?
So it's the digital version of static on your screen.
So like blocky images?
It's blocky and, you know, it'll stutter.
Digital doesn't degrade nicely like analog.
It's terrible. It just will just
stops
out.
And then comes back.
You just
back.
Lose it. It's
you
like,
lose, it'll,
like serious radio. It's like you either get it or you don't. It's like,
you get like half measures where it's like, You get the blockiness,
okay,
and it's like loading a really low bitrate video, and it'll stop for 2 seconds and then come back. If you have that, then I would consider testing this.
Okay,
do you get that for any of your channels? Any of the important ones, at least?
We watch TV so rarely, I don't even know.
Maybe you don't need to upgrade. It's $100, which is expensive for an antenna
or 1 month of Comcast.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, just to let's be real.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
We'll talk about the stuff that we build as we build it, I guess.
Yes. We shouldn't talk about that now.
We've got 3 more weeks of awesome stuff. Thanks to Tested Premium members for supporting the first week, the printer bot. Next week's stuff is all premium again. I think that's it for news. You want to take a couple of questions and you know, call it.
Let's take one question.
We have three good questions.
I want to hear all three.
Yeah.
are you hungry? Are you hungry?
One. I'm hungry.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't.
I need to transition down. I forgot I got to do the question theme too. We have a question
theme. I can give you the one that automatically fades.
Ooh.
So they're just meant to be played live.
Can I just thank you once on air for these and not have to Creative Commons attribute them every week?
Yes.
Can I get a license?
Yes.
I'm going to play the questions music.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom.
If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Our first question is not open right now because I clicked on the wrong window. It comes from Richard, who says, "Hey, Will, Norm, and guest of the day, Jeremy in this case. I discovered, as fate would have it, my fiance is relocating to the Bay Area in San Jose for a big promotion. I also hope to use this opportunity to revive my long deceased tech career. Do you have any advice for finding work and living in the Bay Area? Thanks a lot, Richard." My advice is don't move to the Bay Area now. We're full.
Yeah. No room at the inn.
Right. It's all good. Don't need it. San Jose is better than San Francisco right now. I mean, I don't know if it's qualitatively better, but there's more space and fewer people, or more space for the number of people that they have. Bay Area is tough. I don't think I would move here if I knew what I knew. Like now, if I knew what I know now. It's hard to find a place to live that's reasonable. Like your cost of living is going to be way more expensive than anywhere else in the United States, except for probably Manhattan, even outer boroughs of New York. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of cool stuff to do out here, but it's
paradise out here, man.
You gotta be ready for it. You gotta be ready to hustle.
I mean, 10 years ago, is he going to rent or buy?
Does not say. I assume big promotion means rent probably.
When I rented 10 years ago, I showed up with a Kinko's prepared bound packet of my qualifications.
Did you have a job when you moved here?
I didn't, but my friend did, and we were getting a place together. And that's the kind of thing that people did on the regular.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When I moved here 10 years ago, I was competing. I would go to open houses for apartments, and you would see people, and somebody would walk up and with cash for a year's rent.
A year's rent.
10 or 20% more than what they were asking. And it's worse now. Mm. I can't remember what the median price for one bedroom is, like $1,900 a month in San Francisco right now. It is very expensive.
Yep.
It is not just expensive and you can like throw money at it and get a place. It's expensive and you have to work to find a place, whether you're buying or renting. Houses for sale. Selling a house is great. Houses last like 2 weeks on the market here right now, and they're going for anywhere from 20 plus above ask pretty consistently. Even like Gina and I looked at a house a few weeks ago that was a $900,000 list that needed to be gutted and redone, which in San Francisco is an 18-month process probably, minimum. So that means you have to pay for it and carry it for 18 months while you do the work to make it so you can move into it. And it sold for 25% over asking price.
Yes, nuts. It's crazy.
No, sorry, not 25%. It sold for 120 grand over asking. It sold for 1.2 million.
Yeah. Well, I consider East Bay because it's not bad out over there.
East Bay is good.
Yep.
South Bay is good. San Jose is great.
Yep.
There's BART going to San Jose now.
There's no BART going to San Jose.
Soon.
All the way to San Jose?
You got to go the long way around. You can't go straight down the peninsula.
Wow.
But yeah, they're opening that line next year.
If I could live anywhere, I'd probably live in Burlingame. I like it there.
Super, I like the peninsula too.
It's got a nice, I know it's
it
expensive.
It has gotten expensive.
But it's
good schools.
It's not San Francisco expensive. And it has an awesome little downtown area.
Good dim sum.
And really good schools. Yeah, that dim sum place is great. The best dim sum place in the country, right?
Is that right?
That's South City. Yeah, Daly City. It's crowded. It's busy. There's a lot of people. There are tons of cool restaurants. You're never going to eat any place better, I don't think, consistently. Wow. I mean, New York's good. Same level of good, but more restaurants in New York, but I think overall better here. Yeah. So yeah, that's that question took kind of a dark turn, I guess. Jason says, hey, Will Norman guest. I recently started podcasting and filming the sessions much like you guys do. I was wondering, when it comes to longer format content, is there anything you can do to keep render time, export time, and file size to a minimum? The videos are about an hour long and they're taking close to 10 hours to export. I'm shooting in 1080p. Could that be the problem? Should I start shooting in 720p? I noticed that that's what your longer format videos are playing back at. Also, are you uploading straight to YouTube? Yes. All of those things that you said, yes. If you're doing a long video and you're going to post it on YouTube and you can stream it to YouTube as you record it, that means you have no export time. That's what we do. That's why there's 20 seconds of darkness at the beginning of the video sometimes, because YouTube streaming controls don't let you know when the stream is starting. You press a button and then it says, okay, your stream started. You're 10 seconds in.
Hmm.
So you can trust that the stream starts when you press the button. Not that doesn't always happen. So you have to kind of eyeball. You press the button to start the stream on the YouTube side. And then we bring it up fade from black when I feel like there's a pretty good chance that YouTube's not going to cut off the first 20 seconds of the podcast.
Mm. And but, why don't you do 1080? Is that a bandwidth problem?
Our cameras are all 720p.
Okay.
Our studio cameras. We have that Blackmagic Cinema pocket cam that's 1080p. And sometimes we borrow Adam's FS700, which is 4K. But we don't have... The Panasonics that we carry on a day-to-day basis are like 8 years old now, 7 years old, and are all 720p cameras. So that's why. And also, we do 720p at a pretty good bit rate. The thing that we've learned over the years is that 720p, 60 frames per second, which YouTube won't let us do, unfortunately.
Not looks right now, but
maybe in the future. Have they said that?
Oh, yeah. They've said that you can actually watch 60 hertz videos right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's wonderful.
But I don't know about live stream.
Yeah. So 60 hertz, 720p at a good bit rate looks way better than 1080p. Like, bit rate and resolution both factor in. It's just like with still cameras. Like, your sensor size doesn't matter if it's a shitty, noisy sensor. So,
especially on the iPhone, one doesn't even have a 720 screen.
Right. Especially on the iPhone. Norm's trolling Jeremy. Jeremy just dropped a tear. But do 720p 60 and or 720p 30 at a good bit rate, and it'll look, nobody will be able to tell the difference. If you are going to have to encode, get an encoder that does GPU acceleration, and it's an excuse to buy a big ass video card for your video games and streaming video encodes on a 780 GTX overclocked edition using Adobe Media Encoder, which comes with Premiere and After Effects and all that stuff. You get slightly better than one-to-one encodes on 1080p videos. So that means for every 1 minute of video, it takes about a minute to encode at 1080p at YouTube bit rates, which is stupid fast. But that's also, you're also looking at $600 or $500 worth of video card and another $300 to $500 worth of software. So
YouTube has always said that you want to send them your best video, though. You know, because they archive whatever you send them.
Yes.
Forever.
Yes.
And then that gets converted to whatever upgrades they roll out.
Yes.
So
you can do a higher, if you have good upstream bandwidth. The other gate is upstream bandwidth. If you don't have good upstream bandwidth, the smaller the file is, the better that experience is going to be for you. It's tough to find a balance between upstream bandwidth, file size, bit rate, and like where you how you want to live your life.
Time to make that Comcast call.
How you want to live your life.
Ugh, it's Comcastic. One last question. It's an audio question. Here we go.
Hi, guys. I was wondering why you don't do reviews of Samsung mobile products. I've seen a few articles on the site, but I haven't heard much discussion on the podcast or any video reviews. Is it an issue with the technical specs of the products or Samsung's business practices? As a Samsung Note tablet user, I'm pretty curious. Thanks. Keep on testing.
So we have budget to buy stuff. We also occasionally get review model sent of stuff. Sometimes we borrow stuff from friends. Samsung doesn't send us review units.
They do not.
HTC does, I think, generally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Stuff that's especially notable, like the OnePlus that you're holding in your hands right now, we pay money for.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like, we don't use the discretionary money for stuff that's not interesting or notable, and Samsung doesn't make interesting or notable phones right now.
I mean, they're notable. I prefer to buy the stock Nexus phones.
Yes. Yeah, something that
is representative of the ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, because if you look at it, we review one iPhone a year basically, maybe two this year, who knows. And then a small handful, less than a handful of Android phones. I think you've done three Android phones this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nexus 5, HTC, the HTC One, whatever edition this year is, and that OnePlus One. So, there you go.
You need an invite to buy that phone.
You do need an invite.
It's exclusive. That's, it's a hipster phone.
Yeah. So cool, dude.
Did you want one, Jeremy?
Well, now I do.
Too bad. Too bad.
I just realized there's one bit of news we didn't cover.
Uh-oh.
The Oculus DK2 will ship next week.
All of them?
Well, they start shipping mid next week.
That's fantastic. We were holding out a spot this week because in the forums they said that they were hoping July 14th would be the ship day, and that was Monday, and it came and went, and
yep,
none of us shipped.
They were hoping to, but they realized there were a few little rough edges around the SDK, and they want to refine it and make it nice and pretty.
We're waiting for software?
Yes.
So middle of next week is right in the middle of Comic-Con, which means it will likely arrive for us when we get back from Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ordered early enough, yeah.
We ordered early enough.
Early enough, both of us. So we'll do our video the week after Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's some software to use on it.
Oh, well, you know your game, the sit-down... The
Euro Truck Sim?
No. You sit on the couch next to each other in the game.
Oh, that game?
It's already out. You can play that with DK1.
I don't want to do that.
Oh.
I'm good.
No, we should demo that.
We'll do that when we have DK2. I'm not going to do DK1.
Couch Nights or something
couch
like that?
Nights.
Yeah. Are you going to Kinect? Oculus Kinect?
I'd like to, but probably not. I know that they're taking reservations.
Why not?
You know, limited family time.
Oh.
And at the moment...
He's making the Hadron choice.
Oh, man. I'd like to go. Where is it? L.A.? It's in L.A.
Yeah. It's a short trip.
Good road
trip. Friday and Saturday, September.
Road trip it down.
September 19th.
What we could do is put a gaming PC and a generator in the back of the car. One person can drive. The other two people can be Euro Truck Simming on the same time.
Oh, that's multiplayer. Such a bad idea.
First ideas aren't always the best, Will.
I try. Thanks, though, Jeremy. Jeremy Williams, where can people find out more about you and your projects? How's the game frame stuff going? Are you deep in construction?
I am, yeah. I got maybe 450 made, and I expect shipments to begin very soon.
That's awesome.
Next week, I'm hoping.
I've seen the t-shirt. Wow. It looks rad.
Yeah,
t-shirt. I saw the video for the t-shirt, but then I've seen it. It looks really nice.
Yep. So, thanks to these new reamers, quality will get even better. I have a few extra, but I'm going to ship, make sure that everyone gets theirs.
Right. Did you not buy a t-shirt?
I
didn't
get a t-shirt.
Oh, you fool. do you think those reamers are going to increase productivity? Do people need to send me thank you notes for if they get their game frame earlier because of my hard work on the reamer?
They will certainly increase productivity.
Excellent. Send thank yous to @WillSmith on Twitter. Norman Chan, Comic-Con is next week.
Comic-Con next week.
We have a lot of stuff on the site about Comic-Con.
Yeah.
We're going to have videos of Adam's costumes.
Next week.
What days are you there?
All of them.
All of next week.
It's a big deal for you guys.
I'm leaving on Wednesday and coming back on Saturday. I'm not staying for Sunday this year.
I'm leaving on Tuesday and coming back.
Family.
Do you guys know what Adam's costume is?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
We see them all. We see them take shape over a very long period of time in some cases.
You'll be there with your camera.
It'll be very cool.
Norm's going to take a lot of pictures of girls and boys in costume.
You always take the best shots.
At this point, a premier cosplay photographer.
he's the go-to guy.
Norm's now embarrassed. But yeah, so the gallery will be up on Monday after the Comic-Con. We will have other stuff. What else are we going to do? Videos, party on Friday night. If you're a member, RSVP. If you want to be a member, go to tested.com/membership. And you'll get an exclusive poster designed by Adam that is super rad. We have stuff to give away to the people who come to the start of the party, first people at the party, t-shirts and stickers and stuff like that. And then we also have a raffle for something that's awesome.
Might be doing another sticker trade.
Oh, you're going to do the sticker trade?
So mail us stickers. I'm going to announce this after we come back.
Sticker trade.
Why don't I do the sticker? Oh, you're going to do a mail sticker trade, not like on in person.
Yes.
Okay.
The sticker trade where they mail me stickers with a self-addressed stamp envelope.
Any sticker.
And then I mail them a test sticker back.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to include self-addressed stamp envelope so I can package them and throw in the mailbox.
Yep. No anthrax.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I got a ton of stickers last time. They're pretty good.
If you see Norm or me at Comic-Con, say hi. I mean, obviously, if we're like obviously working, don't interrupt, please. But we love to talk to people, so say hi.
Give you a code word for stickers next week.
Well, we should do that this week.
What's the code word? Jeremy, what's the code word?
Rasputin.
Mm.
What's wrong with Rasputin? That's a good one.
Okay, that's a good one.
Okay. So come up to us, say Rasputin, we'll hand you some stickers.
There you go.
While supplies last.
While supplies last.
Limited may be limited offer in Quebec and North Carolina. We'll see you all.
Stickers have no monetary value.
Yeah. stickers may not be used for criminal purposes. Today's outro comes from Ad Hoc. I just called this one. Well, you'll see.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested. Okay, Google. Duck pornography. I used that joke before.